Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Tyler, we had a episode of Dynamite promoting Full Gear with some promos that focused on two of the marquee matchups. John Moxley defending against MJF and a bit of a AEW Women's Dream match with Saraya against Britt Baker. Kind of came away from both pairs of segments, or I don't know, pairs of segments, two promos from Moxley and MJF separate, and then Saraya and Baker face-to-face. With I think the crowd coming away with mixed feelings. And I'm curious what you think about that as a strategy. Do you think it's a strategy and intended? Is it more happenstance? I think both deserve separate analysis because I think the answers could be separate for both. But I will shade my question a little just by saying I don't think it's ideal to have too many matches where in promos fans are like – changing their opinion of who they want to win or root for, depending on the last one-liner or insider comments or plea for sympathy or historical fact that gets thrown out there. So you can pick either or both to talk about, but I definitely want to get your take on that.
Yeah, I would say in any wrestling promotion, it's good to have the strategy of if you're going to say a match is, you know, generation defining, one of the biggest matches in this company's history, what will define someone that is or maybe a generational talent. Probably don't have two in the same pay-per-view and don't have both of those probably be the two biggest matches and promote that on the same show. You know, I think like you, many people have talked about just some sort of QA on, hey, is this the strategy for both these, selling both these matches? Like maybe we can spread this out and do one this week and one next week where you have, you know, MJF and Britt Baker in the same role of pseudo baby faces at some lines and then pseudo heels in other lines. And, you know, I think as you kind of stated there in your question, not opposed to that strategy all the time, but when you have two people doing that, and like you said, the Britt Baker lines were much more down this path that I don't know if I would go down where you kind of establish her as who you should be cheering for if you're a true AEW fan, as opposed to kind of a bandwagon or carpetbagger fan, if you will, cheering for Saraya. And, you know, that's not so much the MJF Moxley thing, as they've both been there essentially the length of the company. But yeah, I think it worked in a vacuum for both matches, but when you put them together and you have to decide, I don't think that's the best strategy for both. Just choose one to do it. I'd probably do the MJF and Moxley to do that. And then have just the big moment of Saraya's comeback, and can Britt Baker, you know, maintain her spot as the mountain you have to climb in AEW. I would go more that route than the route that they went tonight with that. But yeah, I think it can be fraught, but if they advance off of that on one of the two, I think it can be salvageable, but it is a little hyperbolic for me in general to set up your two biggest matches on the card to do that. MJF has the gravitas to do it, but I don't know if it's smart to do it across the board. So if that answers your question, that's kind of how I was feeling coming out tonight.
Yeah, no, very, very much so. And if we just look at Britt Baker's character, I think all along there's been this issue where she's a heel, but I don't know if it's a strategy or she can't help herself or she just sort of believes philosophically it's better to be playing two cheers. Like Saraya is, I think, intended to be the babyface in this match. I think it's a big signing. This segment was meant to break the news to Britt that she's been cleared. It was meant to be this emotional crescendo of this story that presumably AEW fans have been on predating her showing up in AEW. AEW certainly is banking on the idea that Saraya's story is well known by their audience because they started off with sort of this assumption of knowledge of who she was, and certainly the crowd reaction indicated a lot of them knew, and then they kind of filled in some of the details, but they're not establishing who she is as if it's a new star from scratch. Like you're meant to, baked into her character, baked into her presentation is you've been along on this ride for a lot of years, and now she's here, and you like her, and she's a big acquisition, and she's a former main eventer, champion level wrestler, and cheer her because she's going to be making this comeback, and it's going to be something to really get behind. And I'm like, all right, tell that story. And then she takes digs at Britt Baker, saying the only reason you're any good, which is just ignoring, as a parenthetical statement here, ignoring that fans on their own kind of really got behind Britt Baker early on in AEW, and she's been sort of a favorite heel of theirs to cheer, and a fun dynamic when she was injured, riding around in the golf cart, interacting with Tony Schiavone. There's warm feelings for her that Britt has never pushed back consistently and fiercely against. In fact, she's played into them, I would argue at times counterproductively, or creating some sort of ambivalence about her character, I think, with some fans. But that's what they've done. Saraya comes in and says, oh, the only reason you got pushed is because Tony Khan put you on a pedestal. And the fans booed. And, I mean, I could have told you that she'd get booed. You can't say Britt Baker with everything she's been through. I mean, she's had some epic matches and really entertaining promos and earned her spot as a pillar of that company. She wasn't one of the official male pillars, but, you know, they talked about a fifth pillar for her. And then Saraya comes in and kind of, you know, craps on it and is disrespectful to the journey that these fans in this audience have seen Baker go on. And she goes, you were fed a bunch of QT trainees, diminishing what she did to earn her win-loss record, which is, you know, kind of a thing that happens on AEW Dark, and certainly in the women's division that's happened. And then she, like, you know, pulls the, I've been around 17 years, you've only been around 3, and you don't know how to be a superstar. And I'm sorry if, and again, maybe I want to get your take on this, but if you have a wrestler stand in the middle of the ring against an AEW original pillar who people often cheer, regardless of what her sort of slot is and who her opponents have generally been, and you have someone come in from the outside and say, you don't know how to be a superstar, the capital S WWE branded name for a pro wrestler that annoys everybody, and you're using that term by going, well, if you were a real star, really worthy of the push you're getting, you'd be a capital S superstar like me. That's a heel promo. And the crowd reacted that way. But then, boom, she flips and goes, but I've been on this long journey, and I got hit by a car and still wrestled the next night, and I was turned away by indie promoters because I was a female, and I created a revolution before it was a thing. And all of a sudden, it's like you're getting sympathetic for her because she's telling a babyface story right after saying obvious things that would get her booed by the crowd that she's standing in front of. And then she got a little bit heelish by talking about Britt not having her experience and that she was a pro wrestler before being a pro wrestler was a twinkle in Baker's eye, and started boasting about all the big events that she's been at and the way AEW introduced her. She was inherently already the idea was everybody knows she's a big star, but she's like hitting her bullet points. I've been at MSG and O2 and Tokyo Dome. And then she goes, and now I'm in front of an ungrateful bitch. First of all, like the ungrateful bitch in the tone she took did not match the exchange that they were having. So Ray is the one who's coming hard after Britt. And then why is she ungrateful? Am I right with the theory that we're supposed to believe Saraya is ungrateful to Britt, that Britt isn't grateful to be in her presence because she is a capital S superstar who's main evented at MSG for WWE and other places internationally? Like, how do you bullet point this out, script it out, or run it through your head and think, yeah, this is a cohesive journey I'm taking the fans on to get a certain reaction? Instead, the crowd is all over the place to the point where, in the end, I don't think fans knew who to cheer for. I think they were confused. They had mixed feelings. And then, you know, in the end, Britt, you know, Saraya ducks a Britt attack. So Britt's going after Saraya as she's leaving the ring. So she's intended to be the heel. But then she leans over and yells, this is my house. And I think that was a sentiment of the crowd. Yeah, this is your house. Saraya walked in here as a WWE capital S superstar trying to big shot Britt because of things she's done outside of AEW, and saying Britt didn't get anything she accomplished except because Tony Khan propped her up and fed her a bunch of scrubs. I don't get this at all. Like, I just think this is like complete amateur hour promo design. The delivery was intense. If you had the volume down, you'd think something epic was happening. But this isn't like reasonable people can disagree on the approach to a match. I don't think. I think this is a lousy way to promote a match because Britt should be a heel. And it's not all on Saraya. I'm hard on Saraya. But Britt's playing into getting cheered. You know, and, mm-hmm. and she said superstars like you want to move into the fortress I built. And then that predictably started a DMD chant. I mean, she set the tone for it early. So I wasn't even this worked up before I recounted everything that happened, but I'm kind of worked up. I think this is a really lousy way to put Saraya in a position to be cheered. And I think Baker should be doing more, and AW and Tony Khan should be making sure she's doing more to get booed. And instead, I just think fans are sort of like, oh, God, I don't want to pick between these two. Both of them are sort of nice and sort of jerks. And, it feels like you said, kind of an epic match of a clash of two stars from two different places. I don't think either came across with a clear-cut emotional reaction that would be drawing a clear-cut emotional reaction one way or the other. And, in fact, I think any emotions they had were sort of canceled out and muted by the end. So your reaction to my
– Yeah, no, I mean, everything you're saying, it feels like some worse version of the CM Punk and Adam Page promos that obviously had more issues on the back end that we knew about when those promos were cut. And, you know, with AEW, I don't really give the benefit of the doubt of there being a lot of due diligence when it comes to laying out promos, not hurting everybody's yeah. feelings. Like, you know, in AEW, my default thing is now that Britt and Saraya actually do not like each other at all. And whoever wins this match, if they're on the scrum at the end, the press conference, is one of them going to just talk about the other one and blow up the whole thing because they don't like the way things are treated or whatever. Just, you know, you get those vibes in a negative way of like, you know, Saraya coming in here and telling everyone how to act. And then that gets pushed back. And then there's really no way to mediate that. Now, I don't know if that's truly happening, but again, the benefit of the doubt is lost for a while with an AEW on that front. But yeah, I mean, everything you're saying is right. Like, with Britt at the started out and doing everything you can to get sympathy and get the AEW fans in my mind that have been there since the beginning or for, you know, at least over a year to know that this is the person that's been the star of the whole company. And now this person's coming in here to take that away from me. And, you know, in one way or the other, you as the fan that you and I built this and now this person's coming in here and taking that, like, are you going to stand up for that? And then, yeah, to switch, both of them switch back and forth. Two or three times in the promo and to make it sound like it's going to be an epic match between the two people. And you kind of, as a fan, don't really know who you want to win. I mean, I don't know if you were to ask me like who wins this match and is good for the health of the company. I guess it'd be Saraya, but at this point, like something that should have been a pretty slam dunk first win for Saraya to get her foot in the door and feel like a top four star in the company now feels, you know, confusing and poorly booked at best, and we'll see where it goes. But I'm curious where that crowd will go because at those pay-per-views, it's the diehard fans that have been there since All In before AEW existed. And I have to believe that they would side with Britt Baker over Saraya. So if Saraya does get the win here, how's that reaction going to go and how's that going to change things?
Yeah. And what do you think they're going for? Like, what's the best good faith argument for what they were going for there if what happened was intended?
Yeah, I mean, when you ask that question, are you talking about literally the two performers in the ring or are you asking like the Tony Khan picture? Because I've had two different answers for you.
See, and that's sad because there should be leadership from Tony Khan with wrestler, you know, he's the head booker, the booker, and they should all be on the same page. This is a major segment. Saraya is a big signing. You've got a pay-per-view a week and a half away. You've got Britt Baker, a pillar, a mainstay, a top star in the women's division. You have this other big acquisition, arguably the biggest that they've had, coming in. This is a major segment given major time. I don't think Tony should go, oh, go do your thing and I'll watch and just love the intensity and the reality being weaved into it, and you guys just go at it, and I'll love it. Like, there should be more leadership and more of a vision for what a segment like this should produce. But I'm not watching this going, I think Britt and Saraya don't get along, and they're trying to one-up each other. I don't rule that out, but I don't think that's necessarily what's happening. I think this is a stylistic, philosophical choice on their part. So, yeah, I mean, give give your answer however you want.
I mean, I would say, like, the intention out there for the performers is Britt Baker, her position, her thesis is that, you know I'm the heel, but I've been here and I'm going to, like, speak my truth as a heel and kind of weave in those heel tendencies with the truth of how I've, you know, been the biggest star of this company. And now this new equal star, the first time there's been an equal star in this promotion, is coming at me. I'm going to, you know, say some heelish things and get kind of dirty, because I am, you know, her mindset is that, you know, she might lose that ground, and that's the vibe I got. And, you know, Saraya is coming in and just trying to exude her star power in not the best method of, you know, kind of proving who she was, and that she's come to the smaller pond as a big fish, and now she's coming to take over the small pond is the vibe there. And yeah,
how tone deaf is that?
Yeah.
That is what you just described, is someone who, if they understand this business, that's a heel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, but she clearly wasn't meant to be a heel, because Britt attacked her from behind as she was leaving the ring. That's what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah.
Do they even know what they're doing? I mean, I don't want to get, like, you know, too worked up here, but does anybody know what they're doing anymore? I mean, like, it's, this business isn't that complicated. And mm-hmm. that segment, it's not coherent booking. It's not coherent strategy. It's, let's just throw a bunch of reality into a promo, and people will be like, oh, I can't believe she said that. I can't believe she said that. And that'll get mm-hmm. people to buy pay-per-view. And I think it's, I don't know if amateur hour is a word or just, I don't know.
Yeah, it needs editing, right? I mean, this feels like a rough draft. Like, everything, if you look at all the Saraya stuff, you know, big stepping Britt and saying she's nothing, and just go to, like, you know, all my addiction was shown on TV, and all I was humiliated in front, you know, all that sort of babyface stuff that you can lean into. Just do that and say, like, I respect you from afar, but now it's my, you know, I'm coming here to prove myself. This is my first match back, and I wanted the, you know, the biggest person I could take on in this company to prove myself.
Yeah.
Just do that. I
yeah.
mean, it's not hard.
Keep
just
it
do
simple.
It. And,
yes.
Yeah. And like you're announcing that you can wrestle. That's the biggest thing. Everything else should be subservient to that announcement on this, I would think, in this segment.
There's almost any way of doing this is better than what they did, I would argue. And yeah, Saraya should have said, stand in the ring, have an emotional announcement. I've been cleared. You can have Britt standing in the ring for it, have Britt interrupt, have Britt be disrespectful, have Britt talk about building AEW, but do so in a way that goes too far, where fans are like, hey, wait, it's not all you. You know, go overboard, say some truth, but then be a heel who is full of herself and overstating her accomplishments, and be disrespectful to Saraya. Be the younger, less experienced punk who's completely disrespecting Saraya. Take cheap shots at her life being a mess, and everybody's seen it with their own eyes, and like really get sympathy on Saraya, where Saraya's, you know, like this is supposed to be a moment for her to have this big announcement that she actually has to wrestle again. It's her dream, and she didn't know she ever would again. And Britt comes out or interrupts. However, I'd have Britt interrupt from not being officially part of the segment, but she can be in the ring too, and just be completely disrespectful. But it seemed like Britt gets confused between being the head of the locker room behind the scenes, her character at least. I'm, you know, what you are in real life and what you want to be in terms of accomplishing things, wins and losses in the ring, are very different things. And this promo just feels like some sort of, you know, flailing, ill-advised attempt at some shoot work that's going to create internet buzz. And if even that much thought was put into it, I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's a really easy way to accomplish. Saraya should have been the babyface. Britt should have been the heel. And yes, as you said, there's editing to be done, obvious editing, a bunch of red lines going over stuff, going, no, that's going to cause fans to cheer you and chant DMD. No, Saraya, don't say that. That comes across as arrogant and pro-WWE. Like, I'm not pro-scripting, but I'm sure pro-competence when it comes to letting people wing it. And I think this promo undid any confidence, whether Tony Khan was part of this or not, that anyone should have, that they know what they're doing, unless their strategy is, it's a free-for-all, and we're going to be likable and unlikable and just speak our truth and let the fans decide. And I think that's a far less appealing structure for this than Britt being a heel and Saraya being a face and saying the obvious things and not saying the obvious things to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think if you look up and down AEW, there is a, you know, it seems like it's a, if you look at like a true heel or a true babyface versus people who are confusingly in the middle, it seems to be much more of a effort on that performer. You know, look at someone like Swerve Strickland, for example. I think he's working really hard to be a heel, whether you like some of his segments or not with Billy Gunn. But, you know, it seems like he's making a conscious effort to be a heel, and that's kind of him doing that. And it seems like that's kind of an issue up and down the board, is that there's a lot of people in the gray and not a lot of people who are fully defined as pure babyface, pure heel. And that's obviously not working well from a booking standpoint, yeah, up and down the card. So.
All right, we've got long in the opening segment. I want to continue this with an email after we introduce the show, and then we'll get to calls from there. So, yeah, let's do that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch. Started as a paper copy newsletter, still being mailed out. In fact, we mailed our latest copy, issue 1798, to our paper copy subscribers this afternoon, pwtorch.com/papercopy, if you want to get 12 pages of content every week delivered to your mailbox, including exclusive newsletter, VIP exclusive articles. And this week's issue, by the way, contains Kelly Wells' in-depth review and assessment of the entire NXT roster, broken down into tiers, men's singles, men's tag team, and women's divisions. Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, with analysis of each of them. Are they moving up? Are they moving down? What are their strengths? And it's a feature we've done for decades, off and on, and that's part of this week's newsletter. That also is published on our VIP-exclusive ad-free website for our VIP members, which you can get information on signing up for at pwtorch.com/govip. So we're here to talk AEW Dynamite. And the other voice you hear on the show so far is Tyler Sage. He is a contributor to pwtorch.com with his AEW Dynamite coverage alongside mine on the website on Wednesday nights. He also is the host, the star of the Rampage VIP exclusive post show. And he is also a big part of the PW Torch YouTube channel. Tyler, welcome.
Hi, good to be here. Good to talk AEW. Did the pre-show on YouTube today, did the coverage, now doing the post-show. So we call that the AEW Car Wash tonight. So I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Tell people about your, in particular, what you're doing on YouTube and direct people towards following our content on YouTube.
Yeah, doing lots of stuff. Thank you for bringing that up. Zach Haydorn and I, the assistant editor, do a lot there. Every weekday, we do some content, either that previewing the big show, so Raw, NXT, Dynamite, or SmackDown. And then Thursdays, we have the flagship, if you will, of our YouTube content, where Zach and I talk about the news of the week, usually very AEW heavy, as it is the day after Dynamite. And then we're doing watch-alongs for every WWE PLE, and trying to work our way into other companies as well. But yeah, there's usually content every weekday on there, and then on occasional weekends. So please like, subscribe, hit that bell notification on youtube.com/pwtorch, and you will know when we go live, and you can join us to talk some wrestling.
Very cool. Speaking of talking wrestling, let's get some phone calls from our listeners, if you want to join in on those already on hold. Our number to call if you want to join this conversation, push back against my take on things or add to it or bring up other topics, that number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That places you on our switchboard, and that means we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. And so we'll get to calls and emails as the show progresses here. And if you want to hear our show live, if you've downloaded our show and are listening to it on demand later through your podcast app or streaming through our website, and you want to know how to listen live, you can go to pwtorch.com and click on my reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and find a direct link to the live stream. You can also call the phone number I gave out and just listen in and not push one and just be a wallflower listening in the background. And you can also find a direct link on our Twitter feed at PWTorch. That tells you, that includes the link, the phone number, and the email address. We post that around the time the show ends every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And finally, you can just go to wadekellerpostshow.com, if all else fails, and navigate to the live stream. Lots of ways to find us as soon as Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But otherwise, as most of you do, you can download the show after the fact by searching Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribing to both our Red Logo Show and our Blue Logo Show. Speaking of which, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me for hours yesterday. I did a long flagship show talking a lot of big picture AEW topics, including using what was announced officially so far for Full Gear as talking points. We also talked some Bloodline and Bloodline and Bray Wyatt and more. So check that out if you haven't yet. Of course, VIP members get the extended version with the VIP after show, an hour of emails in the VIP after show this week with Jason, and an ad-free version of the entire show for a streamlined listening experience. So lots of reasons to go VIP, get a better get everything that we do and a better experience overall listening to our shows and also support us. Okay, so let's get on with conversation. I said I'm going to start with an email here because it is related to what we opened the show with most of the opening 20 minutes, Tyler. JB in Jacksonville said, I had to hold myself back from getting a running start and jumping through my window when Saraya stumbled through a promo and said, I am the only real superstar in AEW. She's awful. She reminds me of Booker T in TNA. When you get the sense she thinks she's so much bigger of a star than anyone else, that's just showing up is enough of an honor for us fans. I'm pretty sure reading her facial expressions, she still thinks she's the naive and it's going swell. I'm not quite sure what he means. But she's still something and it's going swell. Anyway, I actually physically covered my eyes and ears at one point. I felt so uncomfortable with how off the rails it was going. Tony Khan wildly overestimated her legacy, and the crowd sounded to be on their last legs of politeness before she possibly gets turned on hard at the pay-per-view, shaking my head, dumbfounded. His subject line is, I have no idea what this is anymore, by the way. Tyler, I mean, anything more you want to add to this and perhaps even in particular what JB said at the end, do you predict the fans are going to side with Baker against Saraya? And I would say if that's not what they want and it happens, it's on both Britt and Saraya. But do you think fans will that this won't be enough to not get fans to cheer Saraya because they're still excited about her being there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the crowd, right? And like I said earlier, on the pay-per-view crowds are the hardest of hardcore. There are a lot of, you know, if there's 11,000 people at each pay-per-view, I would say, you know, if 3,000 of them in that crowd might have been to every AEW pay-per-view ever. So there are the hardcore in that audience. And I think they're going to side with Baker. And if you have Saraya win cleanly over Britt, I think you could definitely get a segment of the audience to boo, and that could spread like a virus through that crowd and kind of be the reverse MJF situation is a distinct possibility. So I don't know if you have to go above and beyond and have Britt cheat and still lose or what have you there. But yeah, I think it's a distinct possibility. I'm curious how, I don't know where they are next week off the top of my head. I'm curious how that crowd reacts, and I would get Saraya out in the middle of that ring and see what her reaction is, not have like a pre-taped sit-down conversation with JR like they typically do before a pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's a distinct possibility, and it is, it's not ideal, and I think it could be the, you know, an MJF type situation for Britt Baker too, where you could have her go over and try and do it as a heel, and she'll get cheered by winning in that way, and then you can commit and run with it or not, and then what is Saraya to you at that point? And yeah, it's pretty fraught if it goes a wrong way. And I think they need to kind of test the waters next week to make sure what's going on there. But yeah, it's everything in the presentation of, and it's both of them, like we both said here, but the editing on Saraya again is going to be on point throughout the night. Is like, hey, that might be her intention, and she might think that that's what's going to get her over the face, but you got to, you know, let her know, like, that's not going to work out. You know, anyone else coming in from another company and doing that to a company that's been around for years and years now at this point is not super ideal for anybody. So, yeah.
Like, what happened after All Out was not a good thing. You know, CM Punk just blasting. Wasn't a good thing when people thought CM Punk was turning heel because Hangman Page took a dig at him during a promo that nobody really fully understood and spent, days and ultimately weeks and months trying to figure out what was intended. And it turns out, oh, it's just a throwaway line by Hangman trying to add a little edge to things. Like, there's got to be somebody who just like talks to these wrestlers and says, we're not in the business of creating controversy with feuds that are not part of the narrative structure of the show, of us trying to win matches and win titles and settle personal grudges. And where, like, the ultimate way to sell a match is not, we're both unprofessional backstage and can't get along, so let's bring that onto the airwaves in a counterproductive way so that we can get a buzz on the internet. Like, that's not being a professional. That's just bush league crap that minor league companies stayed minor league doing for 15 years after the Survivor Series screw job in Montreal. And it's just, like, it's so much simpler than that. Another email here. JB from Detroit said, my biggest problem with Britt Baker is that she's supposed to be a heel, but she allows fans, but she feels the need to drop lines that get her cheered over her babyface opponents, which does consistently leave them worse for wear after their feuds with her. Bingo. Another problem I had with the Saraya Baker promo is that there were far too many meta real-life references. Many people may not have been aware of what was being referenced, so the lines that were designed to be zingers for pops just landed flat. Also, why have them get physical before their match at Full Gear? Saraya is physically cleared for the first time in years. The first moment of contact should be reserved for the money moment at the pay-per-view. And finally, I felt as though Saraya yelled far too much during her promo. As Wade says, oftentimes it's the slow, menacing, methodical voice pattern that resonates more than random screams for emphasis. Ending with some positivity, I do think there are three women's matches scheduled for Full Gear. Saraya Britt, Storm Hayter, those should be great matches and had decent to good builds. And Jade and Nyla was lacking in the build, but I do think it can be good. Women Haas brawling match would be pretty unique for AEW. As always, love the show and go VIP. And that's why I say, I mean, I think this is Saraya showing up, cutting promos without a script, perhaps for the first time on national television. And to me, not saying things that are very counterproductive to, I think, what the intent of her promo was. And then you have Britt Baker with what JB observes is sneaking in, it's as if she's taking pride in getting babyface pops as a heel because her main job is to assert her alpha female AEW pillar status live on television instead of logically building up the match. I mean, is that what's going on with Britt, or is there not even that much thought going into it? I struggle with, is this a strategy, or are they just winging it without even thinking about how this business works?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really want to psychoanalyze Britt here, but I guess there's two ways to think about it. Either she just has bad habits and wants to get over in any way possible and doesn't really think about how that defines her inner heel character, and maybe that's why she doesn't do a ton of in-ring promos. Most of her promos are backstage because Tony Khan knows of maybe that bad habit and it can't figure a way to work it out. Or I think the other situation would be that, you know, she is worried that Saraya is a bigger star than her to the general audience and is overcompensating by getting cheered more than her and kind of putting her in a bad spot. So either one is bad, but I think it's got to be one of the two. And yeah, it's I think that's why it's such a tough segment, is because both had such bad instincts and there's nothing to corral them. So it's like a triple bad effect to get this promo. So yeah.
Yeah, bad instincts. And, I mean, Jeff Jarrett's going out there and being a heel. And say what you will about Jeff Jarrett, and plenty of people are. But, like, that was a heel promo. I mean, I don't know if he should be taking digs at Paul Levesque as a heel. I mean, I'm almost, you know, correcting myself midstream here. Like, you know, Banana Nose Circus. It's like, you're going to make fun of was that a dig at Triple H? Is that right?
I have no idea. I looked up Banana Nose on Google because I had never heard that term before. I was like, yeah, so I have no idea. But
that was an insult aimed at Ric Flair over there. So I think it was a dig at Triple H having a big nose and it's a circus over there. So I guess I have to, like, I'm not quite sure why he needed to say that unless to AEW fans, Paul Levesque is a babyface or... So I was about to compliment Jeff Jarrett, and I think last week's promo was more effective than this week. So I don't even know anymore. Even when I look for a good example, there's flaws. But, like, if you're a heel, go for heel heat. If you're a babyface, go for babyface heat. If it's two massively popular top stars and you're building up to an epic main event of a pay-per-view, then you can both be babyfaces and let the fans choose. But that's the exception, not the rule, and it should be under special circumstances. And this is just... Yeah, it's just a mess. Okay. We'll get to some calls here. Give us a call if you're still listening in, 347-215-8558. And when you call, of course, push 1 on your keypad so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. All right, our first call, I believe, is from Iowa. 319, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Greg. I used to call in from an 816 number and just had an area code change.
Sure, excellent. Good to hear from you, Greg.
Yeah, so,
are you still in Kansas City?
I'm actually in Waterloo, Iowa right now. I'm going back and forth, but I have a 319 number. So anyway, I want to get on that Soraya Britt Baker segment in a second, but there was a reference to the Satnam Singh as the real giant, not a make-believe monster in red skinny jeans produced by the Banana Nose Factory. That I'm not sure about the Triple H reference, but that's definitely a Braun Strowman reference. So, in relation to Satnam Singh being a real giant. So anyway, going to this segment, I agree with your critiques, and I think that, and this is a problem I think that has been done in both companies as of late, but it's really noticeable here, is there is not a single reason to care about, I don't think AEW has given a single reason to care about Britt Baker and Soraya, and I think that it's been, the build has been very awkward, I would say. It's been, there's been a lack of logic to it. I mean, she comes in and screams, "This is my house," says there's going to be a revolution while taking an awkward dig at Vince McMahon in a promo. And then basically I think the idea is that, you know, she's supposed to be this big star that you know who she is from elsewhere, and that's really all there is to it. And I mean, that can work in some cases, but here I feel like, you know, she's been gone for, she hasn't wrestled in 5 years, and, you know, it's not like, this isn't like a Sasha Banks type of signing where she has this like resume of good to great matches just in the last few years. I mean, she's somebody whose best matches were, not because of her, out of her control, but were 7 or 8 years ago, and she's coming in saying, like, I'm the revolution, and I did all of this and that, and when the, I think even a lot of people, there's an acknowledgement of her role in terms of, like, starting, helping to start, like, the change in women's wrestling in WWE, but that credit typically tends to go to other people more than her, so she's coming in as, like, this mega star. I'm the superstar here. I created this thing, and now I'm coming here, and I'm going to face off with this ingrate who was handed everything on a silver platter. You could make the similar argument that she was handed everything by Triple H, basically, that she was the person who he chose to build his women's division around when he took control of WWE developmental. So, I mean, like, it's interesting. And but, you know, she's been gone for seven, 8 years since she's wrestled consistently outside of the 3 or so matches she had before she got unfortunately injured again in 2017. So it's, if you don't, like, know every facet of her career, and I'm guessing, much like the Ring of Honor stuff that I've been critical of, there's people who don't know everything, who don't know her career that are watching AEW wrestling. I'm guessing they might be in the minority, but there's a portion of the audience who knows nothing about her, and I can imagine maybe they don't have a reason to care about her. Now, I'm not in that boat because I followed her career, but I imagine there would be people who might have that similar feeling, and I don't think there's been given a reason to care.
And also, Britt Baker worked for a few years on the indie scene. Like, she didn't just, like, show up, and I'm, you know, I don't, I, you know, when you say I toiled on the indie scene for longer than you as your, like, gotcha for the person you're standing opposite of the ring from, I mean, different people take different paths. But, like, you could say the son or daughter of a famous wrestler gets a leg up, and if you want to bring that up and it works to get heel heat on somebody who is denying they got a leg up because of their family connections, that works. But, like, I mean, Baker worked the indie scene and then got to AEW. She got crowd reactions, and I think the fans feel like they chose Britt. I don't think AEW fans feel that Tony propped her up. I just don't think Soraya has product familiarity with the journey that Britt's been on. I think she walks in and goes, I never heard of any of these people standing around here other than Billy Gunn. So they're losers. So I'm going to – that Moxley guy, he was in the Shield. I know him too. And so I'm just going to go out and cut a promo, and the fans will be on my side that this heel, Britt Baker, who she has no product knowledge, actually throws a bunch of babyface comments in to win over fans to sabotage her babyface opponents or undercut. I don't know, sabotage the word, but undercut. She doesn't know that, and so she's out there cutting her promo. Britt's undercutting her, and Soraya's out of touch, doesn't have any product knowledge of how the fans actually feel about Britt, so her zingers aren't going to land. Tony Khan's a babyface in the company, except, you know, that time with MJF, which kind of changed things for a bit, but it seems like that's subsided. So, yeah. Tyler, anything you want to add to what Greg brought up?
Not especially. I just think the point that they made about, you know, everyone not knowing who she is, I mean, it's easy to – not easy to forget that, but, you know, it's something to note. And, you know, even people – it's been a long time, and if you look and rank – you know, if you ask people randomly in a survey, like, who would you rank as being the most important in creating the women's division we have now in WWE, I think, you know, Saraya slash Paige, as she was known in WWE – would be, you know, fifth or sixth on that list if you ask people, you know, that survey. So I think she's kind of overinflating her role in that as well, in her longevity. And that can be always, can be a fraught thing as well. So it's something to keep a note of. But yeah, I think I've said my piece on the whole thing. So if we can move.
Yes.
From my opinion.
Yeah, fair enough. Greg, back to you. Anything else you want to add to that or a different topic?
Yeah, I'll add one more layer to this topic, and that is that, and it's a, there's a delicacy to this, and like, I don't have the answers obviously, but I feel like for the way that, you know, she's coming in talking, and they want to give this, there's clearly like this desire to give this match like this big fight feeling. It is there, obviously. They want you to feel like this is a big deal, even though I don't think the effort's been made to actually make it feel like a big deal, if you know what I mean here. But the other thing about this is that the way it's being hyped is that, like, I think they could get away with this more if you knew it was going to be a great match. And here's the thing is that, like, we have no idea how this match is going to turn out. I mean, you know, Saraya, she hasn't wrestled in 5 years, and Britt Baker is not known for being the greatest in-ring worker, and I don't know if she if she has any reputation at all for, like, helping to carry people. I'm not saying it's going to be a bad match or a terrible match, because I don't think it will be, but I think that this type of build could probably be there would be more, maybe a little less scrutiny or more forgiving around it if you knew what there was going to be a great match once they got in the ring. And we have no idea what their match is going to look like. It could go from surprisingly good to very mediocre, and so we don't know that. And I think that's another thing that might be hurting some of the build and the way this is going about here, is that it's very, very uncertain what this match is going to be like. There's a lot of wild cards in it.
Oh, there is. And I just – this is something AEW has in their control. I mean, if you sit down with the wrestlers and go, all right, here's our goal. You're heel, Britt Baker. You're babyface Saraya. Here's the story we're telling. We want Saraya to get one of the biggest ovations in AEW history. Baker, you're heel. It doesn't matter that you're one of the originals. Behind the scenes, you can have people come up to you and thank you all day, all night, every week about propping up the division and building it, but stop talking about it on air because it's not helping you get booed, because it actually is true. Live securely off camera with the fact that we all know you built this, you helped build the division, and the fans chose you to be a top star, and we're a really important player for us. Don't bring that onto your mic work on air. That's counterproductive to the way we make money with the heel, which is fans paying money to see one baby face after another try to knock your ego down. So don't speak the truth out there. Or if you do, exaggerate it to the point that people resent you for that truth. Saraya, you're in AEW. Here's Baker's history, and here is what you don't want to say that you proposed to us. Don't talk about superstar like it's a good thing. Don't act like you're a big shot because you're showing up, as our emailer said, like Booker T and TNA, looking around going, I don't know who any of these people are, and I'm a big deal because these people were never at MSG. Don't do that. That's not going to win you over. Let's edit that stuff out, and let's go with instead your story. You know, toiling on the indie scene, being turned away. Those are things people are going to like. That's the conversations that need to be happening in TNA. Just, I never say this, but full stop. I hate that phrase, but it's just like full stop. That's what needs to be happening in TNA. Full stop. Greg, anything else you want to bring up? And Tyler, I'm not throwing you because you said you talked out on us. Thanks, Greg. I appreciate
that's it. Thank you very much.
You bet. Appreciate you joining in.
I do have one thing on what Greg added there, if I can have.
Oh, I don't know. you said we kind of – I got the sense you thought we kind of talked this out. Okay, go ahead.
He added a layer, so I got to talk about that later. Yeah. But no, about the match itself. About the match itself, I think there's a couple of things that AEW structurally does that is not going to help this match. One is that this, you know, is going to be the seventh of 11 matches or whatever it's going to be on the card. And that's going to hurt just based on what is going around it. And, you know, that hurts every match on the card where you don't give anything any sort of particular importance, and the crowd is going to be tired or it's early. And the second thing is, like, this is the type of match that needs to have the crowd cheer for a minute straight and do, you know, I know everyone loves the "This is awesome" chant, but that's, you need that to happen before they even touch. And that's how you get a match that is probably not going to be worked particularly well, as Greg had mentioned. And you make it feel special as you you build up a match, you don't have them touch, you make it feel important. And obviously AEW and the two performers have not done that at this point. So I think the match is hurt from the institutional issues that are within AEW and having too many matches at a pay-per-view, and then not building up this match to be a once in a lifetime, holy bleep kind of match. So I think the match itself will hurt because of those two things.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. 347-215-8558. If you're listening in, call, chime in on this, push one when you call. All right, let's go next to Steve in Baltimore. Steve, good to hear from you. Your thoughts on Dynamite tonight.
Hi, Wade. I wanted to answer your question from the cold open. Nobody there knows what they're doing. I agree with everything you said about the promo, but even worse was at the end, why do we want to see this match now? Britt threw one punch, Soraya ducked it and took her out. Like, what is there left to see now? She disposed of her in 5 seconds after the match. Why are we supposed to believe they're going to go have a 10-minute classic or whatever it's going to be afterwards? You know, the psychology there, it should have been Britt leaving Soraya laying so that we have something for the babyface to go fight for.
I guess there's always next week. You know, I mean, if this was the go-home angle, the last chance for there to be an angle, I would be more quick to condemn it. I would have kept them apart. I think there's a lot better things they could have done, obviously, to promote this match, and teasing a brawl, but having them be separated, or Baker just roll out of the ring and not let Soraya come after her and have Soraya be frustrated after a completely different promo than what we had, I think would have done wonders to create a star in Soraya as a lead, you know, as a co-lead babyface with Toni Storm and I don't know who else are top-tier baby faces. I don't know if we're supposed to be cheering for Nyla Rose or Jade Cargill. Do you know that, by the way, Tyler?
I think they're transitioning Jade to be a baby face, but that is a tentative call by me. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's my guess, but it'd be kind of nice to, you know, maybe clear that up too. I mean, there's way too much ambiguity in what they do, especially at the top part of the card. Go ahead, Steve.
Another thing, moving away from that segment, Tony Schiavone, when Jay Lethal was attacked, Trent Reznor on the ramp, he said, why don't we see more of this? How is a lead babyface announcer with as much experience? You know, he should be condemning that. He should not be saying, why don't we see more of this? This was a great move. That's totally opposite of what you want your babyface announcer to do, and it just kills the narrative of everything you have going on.
Well, what does that even mean? Like, I mean, if you have a detective cop show, and there's a bad guy who's wanted, and like he hits a cop from behind with a 2x4, and then a detective on the scene observes that and goes, "That's what we need more of in this town." It's like, yeah, of course that makes no sense. Is there some other way to interpret that, Tyler?
No, I don't think so. And Tony's done that before in the past. I mean, it's not every episode, but I would say he does it, you know, once a month at least. And I don't know if that he just has such a disdain in his heart for Trent Beretta that he liked it, seeing him get hit from behind. That's what I'm going to kayfabe.
I mean, I am with Tony on this with a best friend. They kind of irritate me, you know, 4 out of 5 matches. But
yeah.
Mostly Excalibur's fault for going, got to give the people what they want. It's like, okay, that was really, that was cool. Maybe 4.5 years ago in the indie scene. Let's move on, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Steve, good point. I think there's a lot to clean up in AEW's presentation of pro wrestling and having some sort of internal logic to the narrative structure and not having comments by announcers just completely. Speaking of which, and this isn't as bad. I actually thought it was kind of funny because it's one of the reasons I enjoy Jim Ross on commentary. But on Rampage Friday, Tyler, did you pick up on Ricky Starks coming in the ring? And, you know, he's a babyface. He's going to be in the tournament. He might win this tournament. He might be the challenger to whoever comes out of the MJF Moxley match. He's certainly just a rising babyface. That's how he's portrayed. And the first thing Ross decides he needs to utter is, what's with those shoes? When he walked to the ring, and, Ricky's wearing slippers. It's Ricky's fashion is definitely not Oklahoma cowboy. Why is that being said? You know, I mean, Vince McMahon would not want that being said. And I like, there's something to be said for somebody on, like, on headset, you know, with a real clear vision of what he wants people to say and not. It's just, I mean, like, I get a kick out of it because it's sort of like a guilty pleasure, but it's certainly not something that I think is productive to, you know, because you're basically leaning into the notion that there's a lot of guys in the crowd who are sweatpants, blue jean wearing, tennis shoes wearing, wrestling t-shirt wearing guys who haven't paid more than $18 for a haircut, who are looking at Ricky Starks going, yeah, what is up with him? Maybe I don't like him as much. You know, like, why would you draw attention to that just because it's a thought that enters your head? So there's a lot of that in AEW over the years. And, yeah, I don't think there's that cohesive vision and either respect or discipline for whatever Tony Khan's vision is. Maybe it just isn't expressed, or maybe it's not something that he thinks is important or has made a priority with all the other things going on. But anyway, and those are two very different examples, but it is and I complain about Excalibur and the you got to give the people what they want thing too. Yeah, there's just things on the announcing that aren't always good. Taz, I think, is pretty consistently really good. But he's the one with just a ton of current experience in different settings, kind of refining what he does. Do you agree with that, Tyler?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, definitely on like Dark and Dark Elevation, he will he'll have fun there because he knows
yeah.
it's not as crucial as an audience. I think everyone else could learn from that. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think so. And he'll have some jokes, but he feels more like a normal sportscaster in a actual sport where he can have fun with making fun of his co-hosts, but he doesn't ever make fun of or there's no jokes at the expense of the talent or, the players or anything like that in any other sport. And I think that's what comes across as like a big red flag, because you don't hear that in anything, not just pro wrestling, but in any sport. You don't hear announcers talking down about the players on the field or what have you. So, yeah. I think he has good thoughts there.
Yeah. Steve, anything else?
One last thing that really jumped out to me, the main event, you had a DQ early on from throwing a chair at somebody's head, which is very rare in AEW. But then 5 seconds later, he's hitting him with the microphone, digging it into his eye, and that doesn't cause a DQ. I didn't understand that, like, logic. And then Daniel Bryan selling a head injury, possible concussion, eye injury, and then he's using headbutts constantly throughout the match. And I think when he was going for the flying headbutt off the top rope, he was supposed to miss, but I think they connected, and they both acted like he missed.
So, Steve, sorry, but are you saying 5 stars or 6 stars then?
If it was in the Tokyo Dome, 6. But, I think Daniel Bryan needs a filter now that he's on his own at AEW. I'm assuming he was calling the match. He might, they used to say that about Vince Russo. I think Daniel Bryan needs a filter left to his own devices. He doesn't know what he's doing.
I have issues with Bryan's presentation of his character. Even dating back to WWE, I think he got his way on some things that didn't make a lot of sense. And in AEW, I mean, there's some great stuff. I mean, it's fired up. He can deliver, like, emotionally that fired up promo to build up the main event. But it's pretty scattershot. The last Guevara-Danielson match, I called it a trash spot. And it was when Sammy wants to do this flashy move as a heel. At least he didn't do a selfie movie while doing it. But he did this flashy dive. And then Danielson runs to get underneath him so that Guevara can land on him so that Danielson can sell the idea that this horrible thing happened to him when he ran into position. Like, everybody gives a free pass to just idiotic-looking dives. And it's like, why? Like, clean it up. A dive shouldn't be done unless it seems believable that a guy's just standing up and is so beaten down, he doesn't know where he is, and then you pounce on him before he sees you coming. And, wrestlers should look for the dive for safety reasons, but in a way that's subtle. And tonight, we got maybe a worse version of it because Sammy did his fancy dive off the top turnbuckle, but he was off by 2 feet to the right, and Danielson had to stick his arms out to try to catch him to break his fall, or Sammy might have gotten hurt. But then after breaking the fall on a misaimed dive, Danielson had to fall down and act like that hurt him, and it was the worst thing that could have happened to him, and he didn't want it to happen to him, even though he extended his arms to try to catch Guevara. Like, if moves look that bad, stop doing them. I know crowds follow up by chanting "This is awesome" and "Fight Forever," so it's on them too. But I don't have to like it. I think it looks stupid, and I think there's a much more. Doesn't mean you can't do highly athletic moves. This isn't about bringing things back to 1967, but just when you do athletic moves, refine them. Add, just make them look a little bit more believable, like it's more of a fight, and that the person who's selling isn't selling for something that they walked into intentionally. Yeah, so anyway. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in that match, don't get me wrong, but the dive, you know, they didn't exactly correct what I thought was a trash spot last time, and it, I don't know if it was worse or better this time, but pretty much in the same category, roughly. And then, yeah, the whole DQ, I don't mind, by the way. I know some people, Tyler, don't like the intentional DQ to get an advantage later in the match, but I don't like it if, as Steve points out, that leads to a completely inconsistent application of the rules when the mic is used, and then Danielson, who supposedly is now vulnerable because of what the announcers are selling as, oh, Guevara's sacrificing a fall to gain two easy ones, but then the match isn't wrestled with the idea being that Danielson has a head injury that's going to cost him the match because, as Steve points out, he's using it as a weapon and not really selling it consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot here on all of this, but I think my problem mainly with all two out of three falls matches is that you kind of reset after every fall. And, you know, you can maybe sell a body part throughout the three, but there are things that you feel like the wrestlers are kind of, it's like you're playing Mortal Kombat and you know, you lose a life bar, but then you come back with a full life bar for your second life there. And that's kind of what these matches feel like. And I don't think that helps to, even the most logical selling, a two out of three falls match is usually booked in a confusing manner. And then the thing with the microphone, I think, if I was on commentary, I would say, like, yeah, the match needs to be back in the ring to reset for the second fall. And if you just have a little line like that, you just say, Guevara's being a heel, taking advantage over here. Tony Schiavone would probably love it. You know, that was a smart thing to do, right? So hopefully Tony can jump in there and say how much he liked it. But, yeah, I just saw that there. And, yeah, the spot, too, with what you're talking about with Sammy, and not just Sammy, but all high spot wrestlers and everything. Like, I love a high spot as much as the next guy, but you have to treat it just like you treat anything in a match. You got to be logical. You got to be mindful. And if Sammy hits that, you know, halfway, you know, 10 minutes later in the match and it feels impactful and then you can throw Danielson back in the ring and try and then apply a hold, that would make more sense. And, you know, if they're both, you know, more injured and whatnot, it's more believable that he would maybe mess up that move and not get it all and all that stuff. But if you just, you know, say, hey, I'm going to do these three moves and not really matter about the thought process behind it, that's when, you know, things don't feel as impactful. And if you do eight of them in one match as opposed to two or three, then yeah, they just feel like kind of, for Sammy, they feel like, you know, down the middle kind of moves and they don't feel special. So I think in all wrestlers are kind of, you know, aligned and having issues with that. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Steve, anything else you want to bring up?
Just the spot you were talking about from 2 weeks ago, I think they replayed it like five times in my pipe in this match.
Yeah.
I saw it over and
because
over again.
There's nobody in AEW watching that, seeing it through the lens that I see it through. And by the way, I think other people sitting at home see it through. They're playing to a crowd that is completely forgiving of a match filled with dives and high spots and a legend like Brian and a hard worker who has you know, great athleticism and Sammy. And there's just not a critical lens that's applied to other people. Or other styles. And I don't think it goes unnoticed by the hundreds of thousands of people who have watched Dynamite and then don't watch it anymore. And I think it undercuts being immersed in a match. I think you know, the goal is to immerse people in the drama of a match, which is a fight to win, not dazzle them with wrestlers sacrificing their bodies for my enjoyment. And that's been a narrative that I think we've got, you know, this generation of fans grew up watching. If they haven't watched wrestling, historically watched wrestling or noted the things that are done different than that, they think that's what the pro wrestling business is about, you know, and it's not, and it will hurt you when it comes to drawing, selling tickets, selling pay-per-views and drawing in new fans and expanding your audience. All right, cool. Steve, appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, we got Javier coming up, by the way. I'm eager to hear his thoughts, to talk me off the ledge, is he going to amplify me jumping off the ledge? Is that a good thing? I don't know. We'll talk to Javier in a few minutes. Javier Machado. But up next is Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome. What have you got for us about Dynamite? What's your question?
I have a question about Jeff Jarrett. Maybe last week they talked about him being a two-time Hall of Famer. When it comes to, like, Wrestling Observer, he can't even get on the ballot, I think. So why is it that he's unable to do this? Because I know, like, Kenny Omega's already in, you know, very easily. And, like, other people like Dennis Condrey and Stan Lane, Robert Gibson, they're in, but Jeff Jarrett can't even get a vote.
I mean, that's a big discussion. I mean, we could do a career, we could do an hour on Jeff Jarrett's career, compare the criteria for Dennis Condrey, part of a really successful Midnight Express tag team, part of a different era of wrestling where different things were appreciated and valued and you know, contributed. He was certainly, you know, not a first ballot main event type guy. But if you compare it to Jarrett, you know, I mean, he was a second tier, you know, intercontinental title level. There's big fans of people who have been second tier intercontinental title level wrestlers over the decades. And there's been some really great ones, but he wasn't a top guy, except when his friend Vince Russo was booking or when everybody was faking injuries or milking injuries because they're on guaranteed deals and wanted to screw AOL Time Warner or running his own company, either because his dad was on top or because he and his dad co-owned it. So, you know, I mean, I thought Jeff gave a good promo last night. I'm higher on him being in TNA, being in AEW, that's point made. Touche to those who go, Freudian slip. I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, Ryan, your question seems to indicate you think that he should be a Wrestling Observer Hall of Famer. I mean, being a TNA Hall of Famer and a WWE Hall of Famer, there's sort of a loose criteria for that, but it's like 40%, you know, worked storyline contribution, 60% politics, who you are, the timing of how deep that year's class is, and that they have to scrape a little deeper to get someone, whether they think you'll sell tickets to Hall of Fame banquets and hold an audience, whether you're in good standing or bad standing with the boss. I mean, it's not like a serious Hall of Fame. I think it's worth talking about, and I think people who are in it should feel honored, but with the asterisk that it's not really like this objective outside party doing it. Certainly the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame is a prestigious and well thought out system that doesn't have a lot of those flaws. And I think that's why Jarrett's not in it. I don't have memorized who's in any of the Hall of Fame. So if someone said, oh, Jarrett's in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, I would be like, oh, I didn't know that. But I'm taking it at your word he's not, and I'm not surprised he's not. But I also think he's probably a borderline case because of the good contributions he's made to the business and the good matches he's had, regardless of why he has been a main eventer in a company that was on national cable drawing, you know, lots of people. It wasn't the number one company when he was, you know, a main eventer, WWN TNA. Tyler, what's your kind of assessment of Jarrett? And actually just to tell people too, listening, what you thought of his debut last week and his promo, his follow-up promo this week.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Jeff Jarrett, the character, so that's like kind of the baseline. There's my bias out there for everyone. But, you know, I think he's slotted where he should be if you're going to do this with Lethal and company. I feel like that's the right spot for him to be a heel that you want to see Darby and Sting beat up. I think works if you're Tony Khan. He obviously loves to have a Dan Lambert type person in there, and Jeff Jarrett seems to be scratching that itch for the time being while he's getting affiliated behind the scenes. So, you know, his promos for me are a little go away heat personally. I don't think he's as bad as JBL on the WWE side. I think he's the antithesis of kind of a bad heel in pro wrestling today, but yeah, it's fine. I thought last week was better than this one. Him leaning into threatening the stagehand there for having him telling him to go home on the segment, I think is stuff he's done a lot of places. And, you know, if you haven't seen him, that's great. But if you have seen him, you kind of know the playbook with Jarrett, and it feels a little tired for me personally, but you know, if it works for other people, that's good. And if he gets beat up and people cheer for it, I think that's an effective use for him as long as he's not a long-term part of the show. When it comes to the Hall of Fame thing, you know, I don't know how the Observer decides that. Is it, you know, if you're a subscriber, do you get to nominate someone and then it's voted on or what have you? But
Dave Meltzer sends out applications to people who he believes are students of the business,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
have either writing credits or are ex-wrestlers or like a lot of current and ex-wrestlers are on it.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Rowe got sent the ballot. This time, Todd Martin, mm-hmm. Bruce Mitchell have always filled out the ballot. So it's just, yeah, people Dave knows who he thinks will contribute, put thought into it and mm-hmm. put in an educated vote. I've been sent ballots and not sent them in, so we stopped sending them to me because I just haven't had time to research. And certainly there's areas where I don't even feel like qualified without considerable time because I take that very seriously. I think he takes it seriously, mm-hmm. and I think anyone voting should. And I didn't want to send something in and look dumb because I didn't take the time it would need to do it, especially when it comes to, like, you know, Mexican wrestlers who I just am not an expert on. So, but I know Dave puts, you know, there's aspects of it that are very much worthy of taking it seriously, unlike, you know, the promotional based ones.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm glad you, thank you for describing that to me and everyone in the audience here. You can tell I've never gotten one, so maybe one day, but, I would say it feels to me more like the baseball writers who decide the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I feel like the Baseball Hall of Fame is the most prestigious one because it's hard to get in. So, you know, if you're doing the NFL Hall of Fame, which is kind of the WWE Hall of Fame, then yeah, Jarrett should be there. If you're doing a true Hall of Fame where, you know, maybe someone doesn't get in every year, even that's that tight of a thing, then I don't think Jarrett qualifies for that from his term there as an on-screen performer. You know, we'll see if he really picks up business in AEW, then maybe he'll deserve an executive Hall of Fame award, but that's yet to be seen.
Yeah. All right. Ryan, if you want to follow up on that, you can. Otherwise, hit us with your next topic.
I was just saying he should be on the ballot, not necessarily that he's a Hall of Famer. But,
okay. Yep. Just being on a ballot is sort of a thing that counts for something, you know? That's a whole separate show, is getting into the criteria and the execution of it. But go ahead with your next topic, Ryan.
Okay. Next topic's on the old page from WWE. Do you know the story about her getting hit by the car? Like, was that like in that movie that they did about her? Like, do you have more details on the story she keeps talking about constantly?
I don't remember the details on it, but I mean, yeah, she got hit by a car and wrestled. I think that's true. Even when she was saying it, I was like, oh, I'm trying to remember the details on it. But obviously I think it's something worth bringing up in a promo. Like, I love this business so much. I got hit by a car and still wrestled the same night. Ryan, your tone suggests that you're a little exasperated hearing about it.
I just don't know anything about it. Like, she just says I got hit by a car. I think she should give some, like, details, you know, like who maybe she wrestled, you know, did she win the match or lose the match? Or I'm just sort of intrigued, you know, what happened with this car.
Yeah. Do you know the story, Tyler, offhand?
I don't. And obviously, you know, I don't know what it was, but WWE didn't lean into it very hard. And you'd think they would, but she wasn't always a babyface either. So maybe that was just not a choice they made at the time. So,
yeah.
But I don't know, unfortunately.
Yep. All right. What else? What else, Ryan?
I have a question on, they said that they're doing record numbers in the UK. So why is it that they had 1.4 million to start in the U.S. when they first started, but now in the U.K. it's the exact opposite? They're doing record numbers. Is there like some sort of international star that they have maybe on the roster that's drawing these record numbers?
I mean, they're just – it's such apples to oranges when it comes to those two things. Like, you know, the UK, there was an August Dynamite that I know made headlines because Tony tweeted about it and talked about having a great, great rating. They did a record viewership on ITV4 for CM Punk's return after his time off. To say, well, Dynamite peaked in its first week and then went down, what's wrong? What's going on with the UK? I mean, I think that just has to do with the timing of what TV clearance they're on and CM Punk popping a rating when you would expect that he would. I don't know. I haven't tracked the numbers since then. I wouldn't go too into it. I mean, it's a promoter promoting and touting that they're popular overseas, and everybody does that, and I give them room to embellish a bit because they're not journalists. They're promoters, and they want to make it seem like they're really popular internationally. I mean, TNA sold more tickets and had a more rabid crowd when they went to the UK than just about anything, maybe anything they did in the United States. So sometimes they're just, you know, an alternate company isn't as affected by WWE's stranglehold on being the dominant brand in this country. And they're more willing to to watch alternate products and look for different things. Certainly, AEW has a number of wrestlers who I think have been popular in the UK and just would be popular because AEW is a more the narrative of AEW as a promotion is more international in nature. You know, I mean they acknowledge the world, and it's not just like you're watching a US-based company that tours. There's something about AEW where they value and acknowledge a lot more that happens outside of their own walls, and that may be part of it too. Tyler, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Occam's razor of it all is that they're going to announce that they're going to the UK, as they kind of alluded to on commentary. So they're trying to pump up that UK audience and make them feel good, like, you know, you guys, we're really strong in the UK, really appreciate the fans that are there watching us to, you know, buoy that. Those ticket sales coming up in the future. But, you know, in general, the UK and Australia, and then, you know, I mean, you know, Wade, with the amount of emails and calls you get from that region of the world, that I think those fans per capita are as rabid as they come. And it wouldn't surprise me that the, you know, the challenger brand, if you will, would be popular amongst that group of people. So I think it's true. You know, who knows what the numbers are? You know, as they are, you either have to be up at, you know, 4 a.m. or you watch delayed, so you kind of know the results. So that affects things in general. But I just think UK fans are particularly strong wrestling fans in general. So they're going to gobble up anything they can get their hands on. And AEW is accessible. So it's a, you know, pretty, the through line's there.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan, anything else for us?
Final question, a little bit odd, but Moxley said in his promo he's met the devil. Says, do you think possibly he has, like maybe he drank a little bit too much and had a near-death experience and got put in between heaven and hell? And or do you think he was just BS in there?
I think he was going for the idea that MJF is a coddled, and he kind of got into it, but, you know, this coddled rich kid who loved wrestling and, yes, you know, worked hard and all that stuff, and he respects aspects of it, but Moxley comes from the streets, and Moxley has seen things that would cause MJF to have nightmares and never sleep again, and the devil is just sort of, you know, a spin of a phrase that you call yourself the devil MJF, you know, and then you imagine MJF with a scarf around his neck and living on a, you know, living in this mansion with this long winding driveway and you know, probably having a lot of pampering in his life. That's the image that his heel character has given off when he's not talking about how much he loved pro wrestling and working hard to achieve what he has, which, you know, is sometimes conflicting signals that has turned the crowd in favor of him. Mox is out there going, yeah, you call yourself the devil. I've met the devil. You're not the devil. I thought it was a fun moment in the promo. I know I led, Tyler, by giving you a chance to a choice to talk about Baker Soraya and Moxie MJF. And, you know, we're well over an hour into the show, and we haven't even gotten to analyzing Moxie MJF, which I suspect Javier will do. And if not, we can also. But, yeah, so go ahead, comment on Ryan's specific question, but also, if you want, just give your thought on the Moxie promo.
Yeah, I mean, I think the devil thing was, you know, a little bit of poetry by Moxley there. Obviously, the obvious one is, like, you know, he's walked down back alleys in Cincinnati and seen worse things than MJF's ever seen just by living in that environment. And then B would be, you know, his addiction battles, and probably, you know, Moxley, after drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels, looking in the mirror, he was looking at the devil himself. You know, he saw that in him and his behavior and what it was doing to his life. So I think it works doubly in that way. So I like that. It's a good turn of phrase. And as always, Moxley's pretty good at using, doing kind of verbal jujitsu with his opponent and kind of using that against them, and just has good tendencies in general with his promos. So yeah, I like this promo. I am glad that Regal was a part of this, because he's obviously, I think, the main character. You know, he's the best supporting actor in this match. What is he going to do? Is he going to upset MJF? Is he going to turn on Moxley? All that stuff. And him being there, them talking about their history, setting up, you know, how there's two divergent paths when you mess with William Regal. Do you work hard and get better, or do you take the easy path? And that's kind of what MJF has to deal with now. So I thought that was a well-told story. And I don't think AEW typically does a very good job of that. And I thought they did a good job there. And, you know, Moxley's rebuttal was in the ring, and MJF's promo was not. So I think for the hardships of the environment and rebutting a video. I think Moxley did a good job, as he typically does. I usually don't have any issue with Moxley, but I thought this was, you know, not his best promo of all time, but I thought it sold the match, and MJF did the heavy lifting, and Moxley kind of pulled it through to give you his perspective while not being pure babyface and tearing down MJF tremendously, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. That was interesting when MJF said Moxley is the great, you know, is the greatest professional wrestler, but like 42 seconds earlier said he doesn't have an athletic bone in his body. I was like, mm-hmm. how do you say both of those things within a minute of each other? Because I think Moxley in the situation with him is very different right now than the Baker-Soraya situation, because I think MJF is wanting to send mixed signals or is still deciding what he, along with Tony Khan, whether he wants to come out of this with, as a face or a heel. And the week-to-week focus group has been lost because he's off filming his role as Lance Von Erich in the Iron Claw Von Erich movie. And so they got to go into full gear deciding, you know, whatever. I mean, there's so many considerations that I'm sure they've talked through that I'm not privy to, obviously, about the pros and cons of what they want to do. And Tony might know from the beginning this is going to be the night we crown MJF, and he's debating whether to have it be as a face or a heel. He might be debating whether – he might have thought, no, Moxie's going to retain the title. I got three more big matches I want – three more major opponents I want for him. But do I want MJF to come out of this as a face or heel? Or maybe he knows he wants this to be the turning point for MJF to be a babyface because he's tired of fans cheering his top heel. All kinds of things could be going on. The promos do not steer me into any definitive direction as far as that goes. So when MJF's out there insulting Moxley but also putting him over, I do think and I hope we get past this the Wednesday after full gear. And I think Moxley deserves to have opponents who he can either show consistent respect for because it's a dream match between two popular wrestlers or tear into and rally the fans behind him to stop that person. And he's not getting that opportunity enough in AEW because AEW is just too clever by half or that things fans keep surprising them or promos keep turning fans into steering fans in a direction that they don't intend, which I think is probably the number one thing that's going on a lot of this time. But, I mean, delivery of MJF is great. I'm just ready for him to be a face or heel, and I want Moxley to be a baby face tearing into heels. And I just think it's easier for Moxley. I think he's in a rough spot. I think he's in a rough spot with CM Punk in a different way than he is with MJF. Ryan, appreciate the call, as always.
Taking the call.
Sure thing. Did you want to add something there, Tyler?
No, I just agree with you. I think especially the run, if you just look at the run of Moxley, when it works and when it doesn't, it's kind of what you just alluded to there, which is, you know, is his opponent set up to be someone that he takes down as opposed to some sort of weird gray character or some other stuff going on. And, you know, that's going to be the issue with his run is not him. It's who Tony Khan put in front of him and made it confusing. So yeah, just to agree with your point.
He's such a brilliant promo. And like, I mean, imagine Steve Austin as a breakout star and like he just one feud after another was like having to hold back on what he was great at because you know, Vince McMahon was still trying to be a babyface or, you know, sending out mixed signals or, you know, just like, when you have a character like Moxley, it's like Hogan when he was a babyface in the WWF, let him just set up the pins for him to knock down, drop him into a formula, spend 3 months building up a heel, give him wins on TV, not tainted wins, not escape hatch, not, you know, both sides it where there's an excuse for someone winning or excuse for someone losing. So the win doesn't really mean much like we saw with Ethan and Eddie earlier in the show. Just have someone go strong, look like a threat. And then by the time Moxley's done with the feud, he's in, boom, that next person's ready. You can't wait to see Moxley interact, promo, talk about that guy on his promos and interact with him and eventually face him. It's not a hard formula. It's so frustrating because it's been done so successfully historically. And it's time to just go that route. And they just keep getting in their own way by complicating things and saying things that are going to get a reaction they don't want. And then they have to augment their plans. And Moxley is a special promo. He's a special talent. This is his time. He's in his prime. Just keep it simple. Build up heels. Get that line going where one guy after another is coming after him and he stops them. And people will pay for that. And they want to cheer it. They don't want to be encumbered by mixed feelings or Moxley having to put someone over while also insulting them. Anyway, Yes. All right. So let's go next to air code 781. I think this is Bryant in Boston. Bryant, go ahead. Welcome to the show. Oh, no, this is Taylor. Taylor, it's a Boston area code. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade, how's it going?
Good, good. What's up? Yeah, what do you think of that?
I was at the show. I actually just walked out of Rampage.
Awesome.
I thought the show was all right. I've been to every Boston show since they've been coming. I think this was probably the least excited I've been at a show. I don't know. Just kind of lacking a little juice, I guess. I think the best part of the show tonight was promos. I thought Moxley was great. I know I could kind of get a sense from the crowd that people were kind of upset that MJF wasn't there.
Yeah.
I thought Britt Baker and Saraya had a great promo. I think that was probably the best that Saraya has been since she's been in AEW. I just left. I just kind of thought it was 2 weeks out from a pay-per-view. I just kind of thought it was that.
Yeah, interesting. Well, don't listen to the first 45 minutes of the show, because it was like 90% me thinking the Saraya Britt Baker promo was an example of everything wrong with pro wrestling today. But I want to get your take. I want to get your take on, because I'm glad you called in, because I really am curious about the ebb and flow of the emotions of that match. Because one of the reasons I don't use the word hate very often, but I'm kind of talking myself and hating this promo, is Saraya is out there talking. She's supposed to be the babyface against Britt Baker. Britt's supposed to be the heel. And to me, it sounded like every third sentence changed how the fans felt about Saraya and Baker and whose side they were on, based on whether Saraya is acting like a big shot because she comes from WWE and she's a bigger star than Britt, and Britt's having to defend herself as a pillar, and then Saraya saying you're propped up by Tony Khan, which certainly isn't the experience of people who watch Britt Baker's journey in AEW, and she's saying you're not a superstar, as if that's the pinnacle of a pro wrestler. It seemed like Saraya was saying things that turned the crowd against her, but then it seemed like they warmed up to her when she started talking about her struggles and her journey and opening up her life to them. Tell me about the emotional experience you had both through Saraya and what she said, and also Baker and what she said, because to me it seemed like the crowd was just kind of being jerked back and forth between who they liked and didn't.
Yeah, you nailed it. It definitely was kind of like a back and forth. I thought, I thought Britt Baker had a pretty good dig, a bunch of good digs. She had a great line about, being a pillar and how she's had weight on her back, and Saraya's never had that. But I think you're right. Like you said, I think the crowd was kind of a little like, at Saraya at the beginning was kind of doing the same old, you don't know what it's like to have, I did this and I did that. And I think once she kind of started to get real and talked about how she's been publicly humiliated and her drug addiction and, how she's been doing this since she was 13, and you don't know what it's like, you've been handed everything. And then, she kind of had a good line at the end too. It was like, well, here you go, here's something else handed to you on a silver platter. I think the crowd kind of went with Saraya once she started to get like a little bit more personal. I also feel like it was kind of the first time that like I actually saw a little fire with Saraya, where before I kind of felt like she was just kind of going through the motions. It was kind of the first time it was like, all right, like, that's kind of like the page I remember from WWE, let's go. Let's see what happens here.
Yeah, no, I definitely think you're onto something. I mean, she wasn't stumbling and stumbling over words, losing her place, and looking uncomfortable and out of practice. Like, there was, like, if you didn't understand the English language or you had the volume down, and I don't mean this, like, I mean, yes, I have issues with the words they said, but what I mean is, like, visually, she came across as a star in command, self-confident, kind of exuding that I'm owning the room. And I get that people are picking up on that and did not see that in her previously, either the sit-down interview with Renee or the what I thought was a bit of a debacle of a promo when she had her first long-form AEW in-ring promo. But, yeah, it's like, in the end, how would you describe – or actually, I'll phrase it this way. Who do you predict is going to be cheered in that match, considering that Saraya is meant to be the babyface, Britt attacked her from behind, Saraya made a comeback, but Saraya walked in and acted like, I'm gracing AEW wrestlers with my presence because of my history in WWE at MSG and Tokyo Dome and O2, and I look around the locker room and I don't see anyone who's ever done any of that, and Britt Baker, you got propped up by Tony Khan. Like, I don't think that's going to resonate with AEW fans. I think AEW fans are going to come to Britt Baker's defense against that kind of characterization and cheer Britt, but they're going to feel bad doing it because they want to like Paige. They're just disappointed that she's disrespected or isn't familiar with Britt Baker's journey in AEW and that there's many reasons to dislike her, but the reasons Saraya brought up are not any of them.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think people are going to be behind Saraya just because it's her first match back, and we've kind of all kind of followed her journey since, you know, she had the neck injury and all the stuff outside wrestling we've kind of all followed. So I think she'll have a pretty big following behind her. But, yeah, you know, like the hardcore AEW fans, I don't think they're going to be thrilled about another ex-WWE person coming in and once again, like, going over, you know, an AEW original. And then I'm guessing if she wins this, I don't know what's going to happen with Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa, but I'm guessing, you know, if Saraya wins this, she's probably on a fast track to going for the title. So I think she's going to have people behind her just because of her story, but at the end of the day, I think it's just kind of another ex-WWE person coming in and Toni, you know, falling in love and propping them up, you know?
Did you sense any mixed reaction to Jon Moxley? Because obviously crowds have been cheering MJF. He wasn't in the building. That can work against him. He cut a promo that sent some mixed messages in terms of how he wants to be perceived by fans. Was the crowd just like mega into Moxley? And how does it compare to your other AEW experiences with other top baby faces at other live shows and even tonight?
You know, I would say, and before I answer the Moxley thing, I would kind of say, you know, I would say that, like I said, I've gone to every AEW show in Boston since it's come, and I feel like every time I go, the excitement in the crowd is kind of getting less and less. I would say tonight is the least packed the Aganis Arena has been. So I was at the show a year ago. They did the Halloween show, the show where Hangman Page was dressed up as the State Puff Marshmallow Man. It was packed to the house. I mean, there was no empty seats. Tonight, the section that I was in a year ago today was section. It was topped over. There was probably five or six sections topped over. It wasn't even close to a packed house. So if I'm Toni and I'm coming out there and I'm seeing that, you know, I feel like Boston is kind of like a big market for him. And every time I come out there and I'm seeing more sections topped off, I feel like I'd be getting a little bit worried about what I'm doing and the direction I'm going in here.
Go ahead. I almost
got
up.
Sorry, it's that 1.5 second delay. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
But you know, in terms of Moxley, Every time it comes to Boston, I don't know if it's just because of like the Boston mentality or whatever, but you know, I'm a big Moxley guy. You know, as soon as that music hits, the place goes nuts. I would say him and the Acclaim and Daniel Bryan probably got like the biggest pops of the night. Boston's definitely a Moxley crowd.
Tyler, go ahead with a top stage as co-host, Taylor. Tyler, ask Taylor a question.
Yeah, I AEW does not always show video packages to the live crowd. Did you see the MJF promo? Was that shown like at 8:15 local time, or did you see it later, or did you not see that?
Oh no, they showed it to us live. So when he first came on, there was kind of a little bit of a groan because then we kind of finally. I know the people in my section, we were kind of all hoping that when Moxley came out that he was going to get interrupted by MJF. So it was definitely a bummer not to see MJF. I thought, you know, it's an MJF promo. You know, he kind of always talks it out of the box. But I did notice when I first called in, I did notice what Wade said, though, where he said that Moxley's one of the best wrestlers on the planet, but then like a minute later he was like, yeah, he's a bum and doesn't have an athletic bone in his body. I thought that was kind of like funny. I thought the promo was great. I just wish he was there.
Yeah, for sure. And I just, you know, AEW sometimes doesn't show it. So I thought that'd be key for you to see that as a live viewer. That could change your opinion of the Moxley thing. But my other question for like a live reaction to the crowd is Samoa Joe turned on Wardlow in the middle of the show. What was the crowd reaction there? It seemed a bit mixed. watching on TV, like it was half cheers that Joe was kind of back to being a badass, or was it, you know, how did the crowd react to that moment?
So, where I was sitting, so I was two rows from ringside, facing the ramp. So where I was sitting and kind of like the section next to me and like all the sections near me, you could kind of sense that Joe was kind of getting ready to attack him because he was started to slowly
yeah.
kind of walk behind. He started.
Oh yes, that was totally. You know, Taylor, sorry to interrupt you. The only person in the world who didn't know that was going to happen is the person in charge of what camera angle would be shown when Joe hit him from behind. Because I don't think you know this, Taylor, but the director cut away and missed Joe hitting him. TV viewers knew it was going to happen. Apparently the director didn't, but we all watched. We're going, oh, this is when Joe turns. Everyone was thinking it because of the angle of the camera. And the director cut away, and all we heard was the crowd popping for it. And then they cut back to the ring 2 seconds later and wore those face down. It's there's no excuse for that. Anyway, I had to sneak that in because you wouldn't know that, Taylor. Hilarious, but not good for AEW.
Yeah. Oh no. That's funny. I'll have to. Well, I have a DVR, so I'll have to go watch it. But yeah, you could kind of see that Joe was kind of lurking behind them, kind of like, you know, Seth Rollins lurking behind Roman Reigns with the chair. You kind of knew it was coming. So like, my entire section started screaming like, "Turn around! He's coming! Oh no! Oh no!"
Yep.
And then like, and then boom! Like hit him right away. So I feel like it was kind of a mixed reaction because of like anyone who was anyone who was in a section facing the ramp, like dead on, you knew it was coming. So that might have been like what you heard on television because they didn't do a very good job kind of hiding that.
Yeah. I just a question, Taylor, on that, and I want Tyler, you to answer this next. Do you think Samoa Joe, that turning Samoa Joe is smart? Like, are fans going to cheer Wardlow or Joe? Because I just think there's a real appreciation and respect for what Joe has accomplished. And he's just a cool, naturally cool guy. And, you know, they can do this angle, but I don't think AEW has fans, you know, on a leash leading them exactly where they want them to go. Fans clearly are independent-minded and voice their own sentiment. I think there's a chance fans just chant Joe's going to kill you at Wardlow, and this hurts Wardlow.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as he started choking out Wardlow, the crowd started chanting, "Joe's going to kill you." I mean,
oh god, yeah. So it already happened.
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to build, you know, Wardlow up, you know, I actually feel bad for Wardlow. I feel like since that MJF promo, I mean, not and MJF kind of rivalry, he's kind of just been floating, and they feel like they don't know what to do with him. But yeah, I mean, putting him up against Samoa Joe is not great for him because the crowd's gonna, it's Samoa Joe. The crowd's gonna chant for Samoa Joe. You know what I mean? It's like. I don't think it's good for Wardlow.
Taylor, Tyler, your thoughts on the Joe thing, and then I want to have a question for Taylor.
Yeah, I agree with you on Joe. He's just so much cooler than Wardlow, especially in this role where he's just an absolute killer, and that's him at his absolute peak. And to me, it feels like it's the shine is coming off of him from a Tony Khan perspective, and. Seeing that and seeing the reaction, I wouldn't be surprised if Powerhouse Hobbs is the TNT champion and you kind of move on to Wardlow challenging Joe and then who knows what happens. But it to me feels like, it is that. It's Wardlow is the lesser of the two from the crowd perspective, the way they're presented. But, yeah, I think that is certainly happening and going to happen. And, I think Tony Khan made the choice when he turned him and had that be the way it happened. So.
Yeah. Taylor, talk about the reaction to Jeff Jarrett in Boston. Not a Jeff Jarrett town, per se, known to be, at least.
Yeah, no, he actually got a pretty good round of applause when he first came out. I don't know if it was kind of like a mocking round of applause, but when he first came out, people were cheering, people were kind of going nuts for him. People, when he started yelling at the guy about counting him down, people started laughing at that. A guy next to me started chanting, like, MJF did that better. Like, MJF was screaming at the guy about counting down in L.A. that time. He got cheers. I couldn't really tell if they were, like, mocking cheers or if they were real, but I mean, me personally, I mean, I'm good with seeing Jeff Jarrett in 2022. I respect his hustle of being able to get a paycheck from every wrestling organization ever created. But
including ones
yeah.
that didn't exist, like Global Force Wrestling.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was filling AAA baseball stadiums with 50 people a year ago with GFW, and now he's got a check from Tony Khan. So good for him, I guess. I mean, I respect the hustle.
Taylor, I have a half-serious question for you. When you reenacted the fan who was yelling at Jarrett, MJF did it better, were you doing your natural Boston accent, or were you imitating and almost mocking the Boston accent by turning it up a notch?
No, that's me. I'm from what I like to call God's country. I'm from the North Shore of Massachusetts. My wife is actually from Minnesota, and she moved to Boston 5 years ago. I was kind of, when I would go to Minnesota to visit her when we were dating long distance, her friends, I was like a puppet on a string, you know what I mean? Her friends would just make me say things because of my accent.
my son and his friends are making fun of how they all talk in Minnesota, and where in Minnesota, when you mean for sure, you go, no, yeah. And if you mean,
yeah.
I got to think about it, it's yeah, yeah, no. And like there's this whole code, and it's just like this Morse code of yeah, yeah, no, yeah. And it means something completely different, and we're all nodding along because it's like, yes, that's exactly how we talk. That's exactly how we soft speak our strong opinions. You know, how do you feel about burning down trees for no reason? Ah, no, yeah, no, no, no. Like we all have our codes. So here I'm making fun of your Boston, you're reenacting the fan going, MJF did it better. Has your wife, do you notice your wife's accent, and has she had switched over to Boston? Does she still have some Minnesota things that people notice?
No, she still has her Minnesota roots. She's from Prior Lake, Minnesota. She still has her Minnesota roots. She's become more of an aggressive driver, though. So she had to learn very quickly that driving in Boston and Minneapolis is a little bit different. Her driving has improved, or maybe it's not improved, you know, how you kind of look at it. But, it was a little bit of an adjustment for her.
Yeah, her driving has adapted. One more thing. What's the most Minnesota thing she does verbally in terms of an accent or a phrase or anything that still kind of sticks out to you?
She calls a hammock a hammock and a crayon a crayon. Which blows my mind. That is, I'll never get used to that. That's like, the hammock is that's wild. That's
wait, what do you call a hammock?
A hammock.
Oh, weird. And what do you call a crayon?
A crayon.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, I wouldn't. You're doing it wrong. Your wife's right.
If I can jump in with the Ohio accent for crayon, which I say crayon because I'm a learned man in Ohio, but the regional term would be a crown. People call it a crown. In Ohio, it's rough.
Yeah,
rough out here.
That's crazier than a crayon. That crown is that's wild.
Yeah.
I do have one question for you.
Yes.
So when I got to the show, like probably 10 minutes before the show started, so I kind of had to just run to my seat. As I was leaving, though, I noticed at the merchandise stand, they're selling CM Punk shirts. So I don't know if Tony is just trying to get rid of his inventory. I mean, because he's gone. He's gone. But I just thought that was funny that they're selling, you know, Best in the World shirts for $35.
You know how Elon Musk is trying to make back his money from Twitter with this, like, blue checkmark thing? I think Tony's having to buy out Punk's contract, and I think he's trying to ease the blow a little bit by selling a bunch of T-shirts that otherwise he'd have to give to charity or send to another country.
Yeah.
It's
going to be like when a team loses the Super Bowl and they send all the other team shirts to Kenya. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep. 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 That'd be my best guess. Yeah. That is funny. I'm glad you mentioned that he's doing that. What was the low point of the show, crowd enthusiasm-wise?
Oh, the It was actually I went and got a drink during the match. It was I'm blanking. What was the match with the best friends? I'm completely blanking on his name.
Jay Lethal and Trent Barretta.
Yeah. The Jay Lethal match was kind of like everyone was like, "All right, okay." You know what I mean? That was dead. A lot of love for Jamie Hayter, though. That was a fun match. That was a really fun match. I would say the Jay Lethal match was definitely the low point.
Was the crowd reaction during Sammy Guevara and Danielson, because they had about 20 minutes to do their thing, were fans just popping for spots and appreciating the hard work and the athleticism, or was there a kind of a more traditional and I would say, you know, better version of heat, which is we want Danielson to stop this arrogant heel who challenged Danielson to a match and bragged he'd beat him in, you know, two falls straight?
I would definitely say it was more like traditional. Like Sammy, so it's weird. So on television, I can't stand Sammy. Like I just want him to go away. I think he could be so much better, but I feel like he's more concerned with like trying to be like cool and trying to like go at like people on Twitter. I don't know what he's kind of thinking, but like he was a heat magnet in there, and it was good heat. Like he was doing big spots, and people were like chanting, "You still suck." I will say that Ty Conti is great ringside. The way she interacts with fans and, like, her facial expressions and, like, screaming at people, she's great. She's really – I would say she was kind of, like, one of the high spots of the show, like, watching her ringside, like, just scream at people and, like, get people to yell at her. That was a great match. It's the closest I've ever sat to watching a Bryan Danielson match, so for me that was pretty cool to see him that close.
Cool. Tyler, is there anything else you want to ask Taylor?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if we want to get into Rampage spoiler zone here. That's kind of way if you want to do that. But
yeah, just save that to the end, so if people want to hear the on-site stuff from Dynamite, we do all that before we shift to something where they might want to fast forward 5 minutes.
Yeah, but that's all I have on Dynamite.
Yeah, cool. So, Taylor, is there anything else from Dynamite you want to share with us? Otherwise, I welcome you to kind of just, you know, give us a little summary of what jumped out to you about the Rampage taping.
Yeah, nothing from Dynamite. Rampage was all right. I don't know if you want me to kind of tell you what happened. Is that all right?
Tyler, you can plug your ears and I'll listen. Fair warning to everybody, and I'm fine with spoilers. I mean, if I don't hear them, mm-hmm. I'm fine with that, but it's not the end of the world. Obviously, it's already happened in front of a live audience. It's news.
Ethan Page won. That was a great match. That was on Dynamite. Ethan Page was on Dynamite. Bandido beat Rush with outside interference from Johnny Hungy. Orange Cassidy won. There was a segment with Nyla Rose. Nyla Rose had a squash match. Jade Cargo ran out and tried to get her belt, and there was a big pull apart and everything like that. Nothing really kind of consequential. It was okay. I just kind of wish they would do more with Jade Cargo. I wish they'd give her, like, a really good program. Just not popping to like one person to another. Like, I kind of feel like, okay, we get it. She's on a streak. I'd like to see her in like an actual program with like someone who is like really good and kind of just let her go. Kind of feel like she's being like wasted. Especially like, no offense to Nyla Rose, but like, how many times do we have to watch Nyla Rose fight for a title and lose? Like, I'd like to see her kind of, you know, I'd like to see her kind of rest with someone a little bit higher profile.
Yeah. Are you in the middle of, like, the construction zone there?
Oh, no, I just got on the highway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we just heard a big noise. Sounded like a, a fire alarm and a jackhammer having relations.
Cool. I don't know. I have no idea. That's weird.
Maybe that's on Tyler's side. Was that you, Tyler?
No.
I'm in a quiet room. Cool. So. Who knows? Taylor, when the crowd ended, did it just sort of feel like it petered out? Or, like, talk about the mood of the fans leaving and forecast, is there going to be another drop in attendance next time AEW comes to town based on what you sense the mood of the building was after 3+ hours tonight?
The other shows that I've been to, people kind of hung around for Rampage. I don't know if it's because, like, there were better matches. The last time they were at Aganis was that the John Moxley-Wheeler Yuta match on Rampage, which was awesome. I don't know. I would say that, you know, for Rampage, the building was probably like 40% full. Orange Cassidy had a good match, and then, you know, he won, and that was kind of it. He went around and, like, shook hands with people, and that was kind of it. It was, you know, like I said, there really wasn't, like, a lot of juice in the crowd. Like, normally, like, you could, like, feel, like, people were hyped. Like, the last time they were at Aganis was, like, the Young Bucks FDR match, and that's one of the best last crowds I've ever been in. I mean, like that tonight. It was just kind of like, hey, AEW is in town. Let's see. Especially, like, 2 weeks out from a pay-per-view. I don't know. Hopefully, Adam Cole gets back, Adam Page comes back, the Elite comes back, you know, Kenny comes back, and they kind of get that juice back. But right now, it's kind of a little lackluster. I was happy that, like, the show wasn't ROH filled like it has been the past couple weeks. That has been driving me crazy.
That's noteworthy, isn't it? Yeah,
nothing ROH, which was, to me, was a blessing, because I'm going crazy with this ROH stuff. Them putting ROH in the middle of these shows is reminding me, and I sent an email to the All Elite after show with Mike McMahon. I said, this reminds me of when, like, they would turn the ropes purple during Raw and have 205 Live.
Oh,
like, what is going on?
I'll even go back further, Taylor. It's when WWF Raw was losing badly to Nitro, and Vince McMahon was trying anything and everything, and he was bringing, like, luchadors, but he also brought Jim Cornette's NWA into WWF, and they would, like, do NWA matches in the middle of Raw. Both examples work. I think the NWA one actually might be a little more a parallel, but from a crowd reaction standpoint, I think the 205 Live one match is a little, I don't know, that's, in a way, that's unfair, because, I mean, I get why people are frustrated, and I am too, by ROH as a brand in the mix, but the ROH matches have been good. I think it's just the brand overlap and sort of feeling like this needless thing being wedged into the middle of something good that, you know, Tony Khan had a good thing going with AEW, and now they're just wedging in ROH. Taylor, let me ask you, because you brought up, why does it drive you so nuts? Let's say Tony Khan's listening. He wants to know, why did ROH's inclusion drive you so nuts?
You know, I just feel like that Dalton Castle match, for example. Dalton Castle comes out. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, I never really watched ROH. I can probably count on one hand how many ROH shows I watched. Like, he comes out with this grand entrance, and he's got a title, and you're like, what title does this guy have? Another trios title? He comes out, he has a match for the world title, and now he'll be gone for months. You'll never see him again. I would rather see Ricky Fox in there. I would rather see someone who deserves more screen time get in there than watching someone who you know is going to lose, who we're not going to see for months, who's coming out with this grand entrance, and you're like, who is this guy? Like, for me, it's kind of like, you know, who is this guy? I don't care about this guy. I want to watch, Ricky Fox. You know what I mean? Like, just for example.
So you want to watch wrestlers on AEW TV shows and live events who you've been on a journey with because they're AEW wrestlers. You don't want to watch a wrestler who other people say is great or has a history and Excalibur catches you up on who they are in the midst of the match that you're supposed to care about.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, if, you know, and when ROH, when ROH Fox, when ROH, if he gets an ROH show, I'll watch ROH and I'll watch these wrestlers' journeys in ROH. But right now, I'm invested in guys that I've been watching for 3 years. Like, no offense to Dalton Castle, but I don't really want to watch you right now. I want to watch these guys who I'm more invested in, and I want to see get more of a spotlight, and I feel like deserve more of a spotlight. And I keep seeing Ricky Stocks, but like a Ricky Stocks type.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So my final question for you, and then we'll let you go, is what singular piece of advice would you give to Tony Khan that you think would help him get that energy and excitement back in Boston specifically, because that's your personal experience, that would reverse the trend right now?
Man, I don't know. I just feel like they're lacking a little bit of star power right now. And I know a lot of it's not their fault. Adam Cole's injured. Adam Page is injured. You know, that thing with the Bucks and Kenny Omega was a mess. You know, CM Punk pulled the CM Punk. It's kind of like, I don't know, I just feel like there's a little bit lacking star power. And I feel like if you're 2 weeks out from a pay-per-view and MJF is the hottest thing in wrestling, please put MJF on the show. Like, there's no reason why MJF and Moxley couldn't have had a promo in the ring tonight. Or there's no reason that during that promo with Moxley, MJF doesn't run in and attack him from behind. You know what I mean? I just something. I don't know. It's just like I said. It's just. I just feel like it's a little bit stagnant right now. It's just a little stagnant.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Appreciate your time, Taylor. Great getting a call from you. We really enjoyed our conversation with you.
I try to call in every time I go to the Boston show, so I appreciate you having me. And everybody go VIT.
Thanks, Taylor. Appreciate it.
If you want to be
an on-site correspondent, absolutely, yeah. If you want to be an on-site correspondent or you're willing to be, let us know ahead of time, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Just put the name of the city and the date of the show in the subject line. It just makes it a little easier, actually a lot easier, for me to stay organized and get in touch with you the week of the show and just make sure that we're looking for you. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. That applies to Dynamite, SmackDown, and Raw. All right. Let's see. Yeah, we're ready for Javier. So let's get to the jingle. PW Torch, VIP contributor, Javier Machado joins us. It's a roundtable segment here in the show. Javier, good to have you. Welcome. How has your listening been?
It's been fun.
Tyler's here too. Why do you only say hi to me, Javier?
Well, because I was about to say hi to Tyler right after that, but, you know. Hi, Tyler. How's it going?
All right. Good.
You asked me a question. You must be mad at me if I first name basis.
I'll be nice. I try to stir trouble already.
What'd you say that, Tom?
I was saying you usually call me Sage, so you must be mad at me for real because you didn't say hi initially. I'm with Wade on this one.
It is. So, oh Jesus Christ! Starting off.
One of these days you're going to hang up and we're never going to hear from you again, and I'll feel really bad.
Oh man. I gotta thank you because you did have two zingers. The siren crack got me. There was another line you had. Normal. I think what was it you said? I'm not into scripting. I'm not pro scripting, but I am pro competence. I enjoyed that.
What was the siren comment?
You said that that sounded like a siren and a jackhammer were having relations.
Oh, getting it on. Yeah, gotcha. Okay,
yeah.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't there. Okay, yeah.
It was specifically the phrasing of having relations, which got me.
Gotcha. Good. Good.
I also have to thank you because I actually thought
I had more issues with the actual Moxley promo than I had with the Saraya, but you convinced me the Saraya one was way worse. yeah, okay. I disagree with that. My problem with Moxley is the first part of it was great. The stuff where he's talking about how he encountered, you know, he took a shot at Regal when he was younger and, you know, got beat down and then, you know, built himself up and then, you know, overcame him and then, you know, said that, oh, MJ, you know, had the same situation with MJF. So now Moxley is in the Regal position and now it's MJF's second shot at Moxley. I thought up to that point, everything was great. And the thing is, after that, Wade, because you mentioned that, you know, he then called him out for being, you know, a rich, you know, that he's rich and stuff, but that's actually not what he said. What Moxley actually said was MJF seems to be having existential crisis, basically saying that it's his mom who dresses him to make him look successful. He talks like he's big time, but that Moxley's the actual real millionaire. So it basically, I'm going to, you know, leave some opening that if this is like for, you know, if this is to show a change in MJF, you know, it helps out the promo. But from my vantage point, when that promo was done after, you know, that last final thing that he said, I'm like, he just shattered the, he just basically called out that the MJF's whole, you know, shtick is a gimmick. The him, you know, walking around being better than everybody and, you know, acting like he's a rich boy and all this stuff, all of that is a gimmick, which, I mean, it kind of works into, again, that thing where MJF is making it seem like, you know, this is my wrestling journey has been, you know, essentially his wrestling journey does not match the gimmick that he portrays. So if he's calling that out, because then by the end of everything, it's going to be an MJF face turn, or it's going to be a different MJF character where he's not portraying the, you know, the rich boy gimmick. That, you know, I'll soften up on that. But to me, like, Moxley essentially erased the whole gimmick thing. And considering the fact that Moxley is someone who comes across as really genuine, when he looks at the camera and he says, I've seen devils, I'm you know, like, my reaction is like, yeah, this is the guy who's seen some shit. And then, like, while MJF is playing a character, and while he's always played a good character and a good gimmick, I think juxtaposing both of those characters really made MJF for me seem fake at that point. Now, again, if this is like we're gonna break that gimmick of MJF, and then MJF is gonna become like a different kind of character post this, then I'll back that up. But if he goes back to being like, oh yeah, I'm rich, look how cool I am, and you know going into I have a mansion, all that stuff, then I think that in that case I think this is even worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of how we look back on the promos, especially for MJF and Moxley, I think the judgment is in on Baker Saraya, and there's no way it can be, no matter what they do, it won't be a good promo. It'll be a counterproductive promo. But with Moxley and MJF, it doesn't mean, well, like, everything they did in it or it all makes sense. But it, like you say, it might make more sense when we see what they actually end up doing, not only at Full Gear, but what they do with their characters, what they do with their journeys after that. What paths are they set out on? What are they going for? I am fearful that the current AEW promo, the current AEW main event promo, is tear your opponent down in a way that you know might really get to them, because that'll feel more real and the fans will sense it's more real, and that's compelling television. And I think that is why people react sort of the way that they do to these, because they feel something and they're not used to feeling things with wrestling promos. And so they feel like, oh, that felt real. And that gives that just immediately is a thumbs up, because they're not used to that, because they're used to, frankly, WWE scripting of promos and people reciting lines and it feels like someone else's voice. But there's this, it's not linear. There's like this other, you know, there's this, it's not a binary choice between those two things. You can actually feel real and genuine, but not say things that absolutely undercut what you're going for in terms of crowd heat, emotional reaction from the fans, and the authenticity otherwise of the role that the wrestlers are playing on TV. And I think that's an astute point, Javier, in terms of, you know, was Moxley undercutting and chopping down something that is an actual asset of what makes MJF work, either as a face or a heel? by kind of doing what Kofi did on Raw by going, yeah, MJF's like a pretender. He's, you know, not quite saddled with a gimmick, but he's presenting something that's inauthentic, and I'm here to, because seeming real and maybe even rattling a, getting under the skin of somebody in a real way is what we define as good wrestling promos these days. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I disagree a little bit more on that point, only because MJF made a point to talk about when he was MJF's age and he confronted William Regal and how he thought he knew everything. And now, you know, 10 years later, he knows, you know, he knows what's actually up. And I think that's the story he's telling, is that, you know, obviously everything he said about MJF is true, right? And that you can, I think the argument against that is valid, because you have to see what happens. And I think AEW has not proven that they can fully tell a story here. But to me, it is, no matter what MJF decides to do, if that is turn face or that is turn heel, I think the story being told is, because he faced Moxley, Moxley is his William Regal in this situation, and he's going to level up and be a true heel, who's not talking about being a fake millionaire, not have, you know, wear expensive clothes. He's going to, you know, be the true devil, or he's going to be a babyface and level up and be the pro wrestler that he wants to be, that generational talent that, you know, he wants to be John Cena, The Rock, et cetera. So I think that is the crux of the whole promo there, and kind of all the stuff in and around, you have to see what happens. But I think that's the point being made. And that's why I was a fan of it, because Mox is establishing himself as the, not the gatekeeper, but, you know, that person that will get you over the top, and how MJF takes that, we'll see. And I think that'll be paid off. So that's why I think it still worked pretty well.
Javier, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, that plays into the first part of what he was saying. Like I said, that he's going to overcome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the way that he presented it, particularly the line that he said, that, you know, something along the lines that, you know, we're teachers, you know, and mm-hmm. Something along those lines. So, yeah, so that part of it, I agree. But the thing is, I don't think that the MJF, he's a millionaire, you know, with all the women and all that stuff, you know, that are knocking at his door and stuff like that, I don't think that character can survive based on the actual promo. Mm-hmm. You know, so if they, like I said, if this is like you're talking about leveling up and evolving to the next stage, then yeah, great. If they don't and they just keep him as is, I think then that's a mistake. That's what I'm saying. So I do agree with you,
yeah,
in terms,
yep,
of like, mm-hmm, if it is a level up position, but if it's not, then it's, you know, then I think it's a misstep, and I think, yeah, it ends up hurting him because he doesn't grow from this.
Yeah, and I would agree.
And then, like,
I'd agree with that too, just so we're clear.
Yeah. So, just, we're coming at it from just different directions. But what doesn't also help is now we're getting promised, and I actually did like, I mean, with the exception, not an exception, but like I was the whole, I don't know if you're allowed to say it, Wade, but so I'm going to bleep it. Bleep writing promo.
What was that?
That was weird. I kind of liked it in like a vacuum, because due to the fact that after that beatdown, before, you know, this horrific beatdown before the actual championship match we're gonna get, and then it's just to like, oh yeah, well, that beatdown, we're gonna talk about that after the championship match. that just felt,
yeah,
kind of weird, and I don't know like how much of a promise, like, you know, I'm not really, you know, you're telling me look for a Stokely Hathaway versus MJF feud after this, what's supposed,
yeah,
to be the big event, and I'm like, why do this now?
Why are we talking? Yeah, unless that's going to be their escape hatch for the match, because they don't want either guy to do a clean job, so they're going to end the pay per view with a screwy finish involving Stokely. MJF, apparently, we're learning he's his best friend. Like that just got thrown. I mean, not that they haven't like sort of talked about that, but it's almost like they're talking about it like we've watched this for years, and it's this big thing. And Stokely's like this relatively new character, just sort of showed up and out of nowhere helped Moxley, or, you know, gifted Moxley the chip. So yeah,
MJF.
I don't know what. Oh yeah, MJF. Thank you, MJF the chip. And so yeah, I had some similar thoughts to you. I mean, I just. I just don't have a lot of faith right now in AEW storytelling. I mean, I just don't. I think it's a mess. I don't think there's a real coherent framework and execution. It doesn't mean that things that confuse me won't make sense later, but I just say as I'm on the journey, enough ends up not making sense. Sometimes it's because of things outside of Tony Khan and AEW's control, and they're sort of scrambling to recover, and there's been a lot of that. But it really helps to be really strong otherwise, to blunt when things happen unexpected, and I just don't think that they are. I mean, I think there's a need to really clean things up, but I don't want to extrapolate too much from the Stokely thing, because like I said, it might make sense. I might disagree with why. I might disagree with the path they take that makes this make sense retroactively, or in retrospect, I should say. But it still might end up making sense. But my feeling, Javier, was similar to yours. Do you have any thoughts, Tyler, on what where you think this is leading, or are they just planting the seed for what comes next, whether MJF has the belt or not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love to be defending this too much, so I want to make that clear. But the vibe I got here was that Ethan Page is the odds-on favorite to win this tournament. So he's a member of the firm, and he, through extension of Stokely, will be, you know, the first person to take on MJF if he wins the title. So that was kind of the breadcrumbs I was inferring here with the story. But yeah, I mean,
but isn't that showing your hand too much?
Yeah, I mean, it's that, or it's, you know, MJF will deal with Stokely if he loses as a babyface. So yeah, I mean, I think AEW unfortunately shows his hand a little too much. If you look at every, you know, main event they've had, the winner has been exceedingly obvious. And I think that is a detriment over time to not have a 50-50 main event in your spot. And I think that there's a lot of the booking pattern sets that up, which has been a negative, not the biggest negative. We've talked about other negatives here tonight, but yeah, I think to avoid this and not show your hand one way or the other would be the real thing to do, because I don't think anyone is clamoring for Stokely Hathaway and his revenge story against MJF right now. And I don't think it really helps MJF when we don't know his defined character, because you still can't trust what he's going to do until the main event of the pay-per-view. So don't add any more stuff to make it any more confusing is my take on it.
And I don't want to think that the MJF, one of AEW's top stars, and it's, you know, if anyone's ahead of him, it's close. You know, he's in that top cluster. I don't want to think his feud coming out of the biggest match of his career, arguably, I guess you can make a case for others because he's had some big matches, is a feud with a mid-card wrestler who's getting a push in part because he's managed by somebody who's one of MJF's real-life best friends. So we're seeing, like, because they, you know, have a history together. So there, it's like, you're giving a rub to somebody who hasn't established their character enough to really be worthy of being in that spot against MJF. Like, I don't, if that's what this is, or if it even just smells that way, I don't think that's good. I'm not against MJF elevating people, but if you're going to do a feud with Stokely, I think you want to establish Stokely better than they have so far. Cause I haven't been, you know, particularly impressed with Stokely. I thought the production values on the video tonight were good. I thought that AEW did some good things as far as that goes tonight, with little of that elbow grease and pizzazz in terms of the vignettes. It seemed like a little more budget and time and skill was put into, you know, presenting their storyline, previewing their matches and presenting their characters as stars. So that the visuals were better. But I just think Stokely's not at a point where he should be feuding with MJF yet, because I don't think he's has been that impressive. Javier, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, considering the fact that he's a manager, it's if he had at least someone to back him up, but I don't think anyone in the firm is someone that you'd be excited to see him attached to. Even if this is to set up the eventual Ethan Page, MJF, assuming MJF wins and that's what they're going to do, even if it's for an early thing, I still think he needs somebody else. Like if you look into the roster, maybe Miro joins part of the firm, and then you push Miro as a top guy, because people are ready for, you know, Miro, you know, people are like, you know, ready to put his face on the milk carton. So something like that, somebody, within the actual, you know, from within the company. Or on the other, or if they bring in what were his two team guys in MLW, who would have history with him. Stone, I think, was one of them, and the other one is Holiday. If they were to come over, and then you actually build up a story saying, hey, these are people that are from your past, at least the people who are, like, plugged in, you know, get a little bit more of it. And, you know, I do not trust them to actually, at this point, really fill you in, but at least that would be something. But the firm needs to be stronger if they're really expecting us to see a Stokely firm, you know, feud against MJF.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was negative, and you guys already touched on it, was the Wardlow thing. And I think the operative chant there should be Tony's going to kill you, not Joe's going to kill you, because this is like a no-win situation for Wardlow. Because if you're putting him in the middle of a three-way between Joe and Hobbs, what do you do with Wardlow? Because if Wardlow's a babyface, I mean, Joe did get some boos from the audience when they attacked, you know, so Wardlow has some fans, but you've split the fan base. A lot of the fans and the more vocal ones, I think, are going to be pro-Joe if you keep, you know, which is going to hurt Wardlow if he's a babyface. And if you turn heel, I think there's more interest in Hobbs at this point.
And you got Wardlow against Hobbs. Do that first. Why are we layering something else on top of it that distracts from something that just – you've been building this up nicely. Invest in getting the reaction you want from that. And maybe they think Joe attacking Wardlow from behind is helping solidify Wardlow as a babyface, but I think that's a miscalculation, and there's just too many turns in AEW on top of it. Tyler, your thoughts?
Tyler?
Silence. yeah, no, I agree. I mean, we talked about it too, but it's just, especially if it's a triple threat. I mean, that's just the main problem there is the pattern of AEW that, you know, I've talked about a lot here. We all have way too many matches and just feeling like you have to get everyone that you're using on the card. And like, you know, I think if Samoa Joe's not on this card, it is not going to affect one buy rate one way or the other. And if that hurts your relationship with Samoa Joe, then maybe you need to just think about how you're managing the roster would be my take on how that is constructed. And that's a huge problem. And if someone has a good story and they deserve to be on the card, then they should be there. But you shouldn't have to just force feed everyone, make a four-way matches, three-way matches all across the card to make it work. So
WWE's doing a nice job with this now because they're not loading their premium live events like they used to. I mean, except for, you know, two-night WrestleMania, but at least it's at least it's over two nights, so it's not like this five-hour event and people are you know, the subway is shut down by the time they want to get on public trans. or kids have been asleep for 3 hours by the time their favorite comes out. So they're having, like, these big marquee matches on SmackDown because Fox is paying a lot of money, and so you're getting, like, matches that easily could be on a pay-per-view built up really nicely over time to be on SmackDown. And it makes the premium live events still more special because the main events matter more than anything that they do on TV, you know, 49 out of 50 times. But the undercard, while premium live events still feel special, it doesn't feature every wrestler who's important in the company. They save some of that for TV. And, you know, that's a formula that works much better than saying, let's make it a three-way or a four-way or make our pay-per-views bloated or undercut the people who have really earned a spot on the pay-per-view and are really going to sell buys because we want to get everybody on there. And it's going to either, you know, crowd the show, shorten the matches, or exhaust the audience. There's other ways to go about this. And if AEW starts just doing three- and four-way matches for the wrong reasons, when they've been disciplined about not doing it, I mean, to me, it's three-way matches. It's just – I am not a fan of them for multiple reasons, but often it's just a crutch for booking. I think it's a crutch for lazy booking or bad booking when we start getting a proliferation of them, and I hope we're not headed that way. Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
Real quick, I was ready to throw something into my TV when Shivani said why don't we see more of this? And he has done that like pretty much every single show. When there's been a sneak attack, which, you know, also you shouldn't be doing a sneak attack every single show, where, you know, he says, or someone takes a cheap shot, he, at least once per show, he has one of those lines. You know, that was a smart thing to do. He went further this time because he said, you know, why don't we see that more often? And I'm like, because Tony, like, you know, your football team does not line up 5 minutes before the game and start scoring touchdowns. That's why, you know. I was angry at that. And then particularly since, like, late, you know, when Ty it gets in the way from Danielson was gonna leap to the outside and she gets in the way to interrupt Danielson. He's like, oh, you know, she shouldn't be doing that. And I'm like, why not? I mean, if you have someone on the outside, why not? I mean, you know, take advantage of it. Isn't that what you told us?
It's like when there's an eye rake in W. Javier, it's like when there's an eye rake in WWE, and they're like, the announcer be like, oh, the referee didn't see that. And I'm like, when was the last time the referee DQ'd someone when they saw an eye rake? It's part of why I do like structure to things, because if you have structure and consistency and internal logic, then when heels cheat, you have this sort of. It feels like it's wrong because it breaks the system that's supposed to be set up to determine who the best wrestler is. That's why we have matches. And so cheating or or having someone at ringside interfere ought to inherently, through consistent framing of it, be seen as a shortcut akin to, you know, if you work in an office with someone and they cook the books to make themselves look like they've sold more sprockets than you and they get a promotion. Nobody likes that. Spacely sprockets, you know, whoever sells the most spacely sprockets should get the promotion, not the person who cooks the books. That's like the whole premise of the movie Bad Influence. Like you can't have people cheating in the office to get ahead. And in wrestling, it should be the same way because it's relatable. You know, it's relatable. And there's just nothing relatable about inconsistency and praising things that no one should be proud of doing. And that's what, you know, going full circle, Shivani did there.
Well, hey, at least the ref, started the match immediately. After the beatdown, I know you love that. I was watching that. I was like, "Oh, this is the Wade Keller Invitational match right here." That's all I can think of. So
yes, and it's not like some weird pet peeve. It's entirely logical. It's like I mean, I like it. Just everybody should point that out, and no promoter and wrestler or referee should. It's like out of convenience. We're going to lose viewers if we pause and have the referee like wait for the person to recover. It's like their priorities are so counterproductive and undercut. You know, just sort of that integrity and logic and people invest. If it just seems like nonsense and randomness, people aren't going to be invested in the same way. And all they're going to be left doing is popping for people, leaping at people who are waiting to catch them. Javier.
and keeping with the consistency, the whole gets a chair thrown at him, disqualification. Okay, I'm buying it. He then attacks Sammy. Then attacks Danielson with the mic, and I'm like, okay, well, this is while the commentator team is not saying this. We've seen this enough time. You can make the inference that the match hasn't restarted yet, so he's taking advantage of the time, and so the match doesn't restart until he gets in the ring. But then after the next fall. When Sammy gets the next fall, the match continued. There was no real reset. So,
yep.
I'm like, okay, well, you could get away with that, the attack on the outside, because, okay, that's the heel. You're going to heel heat, and, you know, that makes sense. But then you're not reinforcing that idea, you know, when you get the second fall. And, again, it's really sloppy. And, I mean, and it's not just sloppy because, like, WWE does a lot of this, stuff too that kind of doesn't make sense in the match. But a lot of that is sloppy because they're doing something that they've always done, forgetting why it was done originally. So then they start doing stuff when it isn't warranted. That's what happens when you're building on a foundation without understanding the foundation, and that happens from time to time. Like the idea of a while back we were discussing about because Graves had said that you only get one break during a tag team match. Remember that?
Yeah. Yep. I do.
Yeah. Well, the reason behind that was originally the idea was that the person making the break, he's in the ring illegally. So then the referee's warning, right. If you do this again, you get disqualified. That was, you know, so it wasn't that you had one free break. It was that you would get, you know, warned. It was something. It's something that I was missing that I used to love of older school wrestling which was a great way to get heel heat on a heel, where they would hold, where they would get somebody on a hold. The wrestler would get to the ropes, and the referee would count to four, and then at five he would be disqualified. But then he gives them a warning, and then the heel wrestler would not let go. So then he would count to five again, and then that's when the heel would let go. You know, so basically the heel would be holding for like a 10 count. And that was something that was used a lot, you get that one warning. Or like the closed fist one. You would hit somebody, a wrestler would hit someone with a closed fist, and you get a warning. It wasn't that you only get one per match. It was that you would get a warning. And that's the thing. The heels would know that you only get one, that you're going to get one warning, so I'm going to use it to take advantage. You know, and then they do the whole pure title. They build the whole pure title about you get to throw one punch per match. It's like, you know, so you end up getting stuff like that.
My favorite is when somebody gets choked against the ropes. The ref counts to four. The wrestler breaks at five, and then they just start choking again. And the ref counts to four, and they break at five, and the wrestler starts choking again. And they break at four, and then, you know, it's just like, I mean, wrestling doesn't make any sense if you think too hard about it, which is why the things that you can make sense of, you should work really hard to be consistent with and build that guy, you know, build that guy post. Because obviously if you watch MMA, there's a million things in a pro-wrestling match that make no sense. But if you sort of have a sort of rules of engagement to how a fight looks in pro wrestling, people are obviously willing to, you know, let go of certain things. But you don't want to just be inconsistent on things that draw attention and pull you out of that. It's a potentially immersive experience if everything that happens has some sort of set of rules and makes sense. But yeah, when heels attack somebody before the match, and that's done, and the intent of doing it is to put heat on the heel, like that's the intent. So when you extinguish that by having the referee go, yeah, ring the bell, let's give an advantage to the heel who just cheated, just did an unsportsmanlike attack, let's reward that. Now you're starting to make the babyface look like a fool for not thinking of it first, because there's no punishment. There's no downside to it. And so the company just looks foolish because they don't have a set of rules. They're like, if you can score a touchdown in the NFL by running to the sidelines, into a back hallway, running in the back hall, coming out through the end zone and scoring a touchdown by running into the end zone backwards, and the referee goes, oh, well, you're in the end zone, 6 points. Well, now you're not cheating. You're taking advantage of a loophole, and the other team is foolish for not doing it. Like, that's how ridiculous some of these things are in wrestling. But I don't sense there's any mindset in AEW where anyone is thinking this about any of this stuff. I think there's two generations of wrestlers who none of this stuff makes any sense to them, because all they want is a fight for every chance. And they want to do high spots, and they're going to get 5 and S stars somewhere and think that defines them as a good wrestler. And it doesn't, it shouldn't, and it's counterproductive to drawing ratings and selling tickets. I wouldn't rant about any of this if it was working and they're drawing more fans in Boston every time they go. But almost everywhere they go, you know, we're hearing reports, and WrestleTix is documenting it. That's not the case. And, you know, they can have other reasons for it, but, it's just, AEW would be better off, I think, if they paid attention to some of the stuff that culturally in that company, nobody with power or influence thinks is important enough to bother with. Or even aware it's a thing. That's the scary part. I don't even think they think it's a thing. It's not even on their radar as something that even is a thing. Anyway, Javier.
And the last segment, I don't think we've talked about, how much time have they devoted to Preston Vance?
Off and on a decent amount over 3.5 years.
I mean, particularly with this whole La Facción thing, because it feels like this, you know, Preston, we're trying to recruit Preston Vance has been going on for like 2 months now. No, longer than 2 months, like 3-4 months.
Yep.
And it's been a lot of screen time, which is essentially has been the exact same thing. And I'm like, what for? Like, you would think that they were building him up for, you know, like, I mean, Hook deserves that time. you know, any other wrestler deserves more of that time if you're not going to pull the trigger on Preston Vance. Hey, he might be an amazing wrestler, and he joins the Fox Feeling, and he becomes, like, a great, you know, a great addition, and we all love him. But it's been 5 months. I'm like, way over this. You know, it's just their storylines sometimes feel like they're on pause for freaking ever.
I agree. Totally. And then, it's very – there's a very time warp aspect to it. Good point. Javier, I'm with you here, and I want to wrap up soon. We've got booked at the clock. Time has blown by. This has been fun, but we've got to wrap up. But I want to read a couple emails just to round things out here. Steve from Baltimore said, did we really hear Tony Schiavone say, why don't we see more of this? So he called in and talked about that, and he made his case for it. Getting something so basic this wrong should not be happening 3 years into Dynamite. And so, that just – it backs up my feeling about what – the cultural mindset in AEW, which is there's a very much a value on certain things. And I think a disregard or even worse, an obliviousness to other things that are essential for those other things that they value to have the effect that they want. JB in Jacksonville, I read part of his email earlier on Saraya, but he made a couple other points. He said, wait, I hope you're well. For the first time in Dynamite history, I'm done halfway through an episode. What in God's name is going on with this show? It's like someone made a bet on who you could drive off the most viewers in quarter 4 and 5. Nobody wants TNA nostalgia. It was punishment enough the first time. 15 minutes of Jay Lethal sucking the enthusiasm out of an entire building for the fifth week in a row makes absolutely no sense. And my interest dropped off a cliff with more of Sanjay and Jeff Jarrett tricking your brain into associating AEW with a 15-year-old TNA product that was a joke. I 100% think there is a stench to TNA castoffs, and I'm convinced part of the reason the crowd was so dead for Moxley is because AEW had just spent the last 20 minutes between that and the Saraya segment bush-leaguing itself. TK is burning the playbook he used to be so successful and replacing it with the playbooks of these lesser companies like ROH, TNA, and NXT that we were originally looking for an alternative to in the first place. As a counterpoint, Zach in Texas. AEW put on a promo seminar tonight. MJF, Britt, Saraya, Stokely, Mox, and even Jeff Jarrett all brought their A-game. Speaking of Double J, he earned a lot of grace for me after the way he utterly buried Braun Strowman. It also doesn't hurt that My World is a great entrance theme. Full Gear is shaping up nicely as well. Bryan Danielson and Sammy Guevara decided to just light each other up, which makes for a very good pro wrestling match. Does it? They also built up Rampage nicely. Speaking of, any guesses as to what kind of match Jungle Boy is going to challenge Luchasaurus to? I guess a street fight. Contrasting views there, from Zach and JB, not unexpected from Zach, but I guess in the end, rounding out, I just don't want to wreck anything else. Jungle Boy did cut a promo and did say, as happens on Dynamite now, you know, they do these things where they pitch to Rampage, which is smart, but it feels like sort of very ham-fisted sometimes when they kind of wedge these promos that go, I'm not going to say it now. I'm going to say it in 2 days on Rampage, and there's no reason the wrestler would do that other than I'm pretending I'm not here to promote something that's 2 days from now so you'll actually watch it. It doesn't feel natural. It feels like the wrestlers are part of a shtick, not a part of a formula to get people to watch a show, and the wrestler shouldn't be in that position. But what do you think Jungle Boy is going to challenge Luchasaurus to? What kind of match? What do you think, Tyler?
I mean, I haven't thought much of it, which I think tells kind of the state of that feud. So a street fight would make sense. I would hope it's maybe a 5-minute time limit match so we don't have super long matches on the pay-per-view, if I can say that also facetiously. But, I think it is I probably align more with the first emailer than Zach, unfortunately, on the direction of the company on the playbook there. And there was something else in the middle there about about Rampage. I think the mindset of the wrestler, if you want to be generous, is that, you know, there's a million people watching on Wednesdays, but they want to tell their super, super secret 300,000 fans the real answer on Friday. And don't want all the non-diehards to hear it, the 700,000 people that couldn't stand to watch them on Friday. So I think that's the mindset there.
Javier, anything on that? And also any other closing words?
I think the match is going to be a La Brea tar pit match.
Very good. I have no guess yet. I'm just willing to wait. I guess it happened on Rampage, unless it's pre-taped. Yeah.
My brother is speculating that one of the Masked Singers on Masked Singers is Chris Jericho.
Oh, okay. Did they actually sing on that show? Because Scott Hall made fun of Jericho for not really actually being able to sing without a band in the background.
Yeah, I think they do, but with, like, help, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so... but I haven't watched it. I don't watch it, so I'm just taking his word for it.
Yeah, I just, like, it was the day after Jericho sang on some singing show, and then Scott Hall was on, I was interviewing him on this, on a podcast, and he's like, just like, I think it was like out of nowhere, he's like, did you hear, and it's in an inimitable way, did you hear Jericho on that show last night? Isn't he supposed to be a singer? Anyway, yeah.
And I also do agree.
Hey, our on-site correspondent Taylor has an answer for us. He just emailed. He's listening still. He's
okay.
Feeling Javier. Jungle Boy challenged him to drum roll.
Oh.
So there you go. Speculation is over. Spoiler alert, everyone. A cage match.
Well, you got to have something in the middle of the show that gets people fired up. So there you go.
And I'm sure the cage door will be open and people climb in and out, whatever. All right.
Oh, yeah. So good.
I'm getting sounding cynical. Javier. Javier.
Yeah, I was going to say that I agree with the one thing I really agree with Zach on is the My World theme song for Jericho, Double J. And it's funny how I mentioned that it always felt that Double J was pushed one rung higher than he was supposed to be at the time. I always felt that theme song should have been much better off in a different wrestler. I love that song.
That's like, you know, when you marry up or, you know, like, you know, you're like, oh, you two are a couple. Like, it's like, oh, that's your music? That's too good for you. That's like an ultimate insult.
That's exactly, yeah. And I mean, and that was like the one thing I liked about the Ric Flair's last match is that they put an intro to it that made it like really like unnerving. And it was like an awesome, you know, intro and actually got me into seeing Jeff Jarrett again, you know, for that part of it. But yeah, I mean that song is definitely like way too good for him.
Yeah. Cool. Javier, always fun talking with you. Thanks.
Yeah. Have a good night, guys.
Yep. You too. Tyler, yeah. Anything you want to close with other than,
I don't think so. I think we covered everything. I'm trying to think of all the little.
Don't challenge me. I'll find something. I can extend the show. I can find something we haven't talked about.
There's a million vignettes, but yeah. No, I think the last two emails you read, if I can leave on a little bit more of a level-headed note, and that's not to say that the email is not level-headed, but, you know, I think it's somewhere in between there. I don't think AEW is, you know, TNA circa 2007. I also don't think it's, you know, where it should be. And you know, me and you've been doing the show, you know, every couple of weeks for a long time now. I feel like a lot of the same issues are there. And I don't know what would solve it, but I still think there's potential here, which is why there's as many people watching it. And there's still such a quality of the roster. And it still feels different in not always the best way to WWE. But I still think there's there. So just like, you know, to remain somewhat hopeful of correcting course in some smaller areas to make the show feel a little bit more impactful in the ways that it can, I think is possible on the horizon, but it would be nice to see a couple minor changes that we talk about a lot on here. Just some sort of, you know, if someone were to watch the film the next day and kind of give notes and be like, hey, here's all the things that could have been cleaned up before we did it. And then, if, you know, one or two of those things are taken into account, I think would be, Not a small thing, but it would be a nice thing to see just a couple changes to show that they understand what is lacking and what can make the show a little bit better and more impactful. Obviously, getting people back, you know, Cole, the Bucks, Kenny, all that stuff, making them feel impactful will help as well. But there's a couple things. It's just low-hanging fruit I would like to see in the near future, but I don't know if I will. So,
yeah. All right. Cool. Good points. Thank you, Tyler. Always fun.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Excellent. Yep. We'll talk to y'all next time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Spread the word. And until next time, Wade Keller on behalf of Tyler Sage, signing off.